Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to tournament poker strategy. And now, here are your hosts, Ron Fezbuddy and Killing Bird.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. Killing Bird here.
Hola.
Joined by my lovely co-host, Ron Fezbuddy. How are you doing, sir?
Fantastic. Beautiful.
I feel like last podcast I might have called you like my beautiful co-host. So I had to come up with a different word. I went with lovely.
Well, thank you. I feel pretty today. Thank you.
Yeah.
Makes me feel pretty.
Yeah, I saw your last Twitter picture. It looked pretty good.
What did I tweet out? Did I press the wrong button?
I wanted to delete that one. So this is going to be a fun show today.
Yeah.
We're going to bring in Mark Galeotto in a little bit to get caught up a little bit on his summer in the World Series, but we also wanted him to be on to sort of offer the pro perspective on some hands from TP member Chris Kusha,
yep.
Who, for people who don't know, finished 27th in the main event, a longtime Tournament Poker Edge member and friend of the family.
Yep.
It was a really fun sweat. So we're gonna have Mark come in and do some analysis of some hands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But just really looking forward to this one because I know that I think I speak for everybody on Team TPE that it was like almost as much fun sweating Chris as it was if we had been in the tournament ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, it was as fun sweating him as if it would have been if any of our pros or even any of the owners had made it this far. Because,
yeah.
Like, he has been a member for years. I looked at him, I think he's like a 2010, 2011. I mean, that's OG.
Yeah.
He's been at... We'll ask him, but I don't know if he's been at every meetup, but he certainly was at the first meetup and has been at many, many meetups ever since.
Yeah.
And, you know, he repped TPE with a patch. He's going to be on ESPN wearing TPE patch. And, you know, he turned down, you know, a patch from 888, and he was just all about TPE. He gives TPE a lot of credit for helping him. Obviously, he's put a lot of work in on his own. But it's just like it's like someone in your family did it. And it was so much fun to watch because of that.
Yeah, it was amazing. I'm excited to not only, like, obviously talk a little bit of strategy, but I'm kind of fascinated. Yeah, I'm fascinated by the whole idea of making it that deep and just kind of the thing.
You've never actually made it deep in a tournament, have you?
No, not really.
Sorry, I was saying to put down some markets on, but
I had my deepest run I've ever had this summer.
Did you bubble? You bubbled some? Yeah.
No, I actually cashed something.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it wasn't the 50-50 tournament from last year.
No, I mean, there's nothing like – I mean, we've all dreamed about making a deep run in the main event. So I want to ask him how it was and being on the feature table and just the excitement and the nerves and all that stuff that we you know, every poker pro, no matter who you are, no matter how jaded you may be, no matter how experienced you may be, when the main event comes around, you daydream and you fantasize about making that November 9 and you're going to deep run and making that day 7. And so let's ask him about it. And along the way, before we bring him on, I do have a hand I want to cover that I played in the Borgata, one of their tournaments recently that I want to talk to you and Mark about. So
nice.
Curious take on that.
Yeah, we can go over that one with Mark before we bring Chris in.
Cool.
I love it. All right. Well, let's not keep the people waiting because they don't want to hear about us.
Yeah, and we got a long, deep run to talk about. So let's see. I'm sure we'll be talking to him for a while.
Sounds good. All right, we'll wrap it up. We'll bring Mark in, spend a little time with him, and then after that, we'll bring Chris in. So we'll be right back on the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. Welcome back to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. Time to get my old friend and former roommate, Mark Galeotto, in here. What's up, sir?
What's going on, guys?
Long time no see.
He's also your fellow crow. Is that what you would call your Counting Crow fans call each other? Like your crows? Are you two crows?
I kind of like that.
You're just jealous because you don't get to come to Counting Crows shows with us.
That's true. That's true. But there is only room for two in a spoon. So I guess really what I do.
You're doing it wrong, man.
It's kind of weird without you, Derek. Like, wake up and just you're not here.
But, I know.
it's completely different now.
But yet, my house is always clean.
I'm not a slob, goddammit. I am actually clean. I'm, with age, I've become clean boss.
What is that like, guys, to come back from the series after you've been on, you know, basically, you know, camp for a month and a half with the guys? I mean, I only come out for like a 4 or 5 days, and for me, it's like it kind of sucks just that amount of time. I can imagine it's a big adjustment coming back.
Yeah, it's sort of like. It's a tale of two worlds, sort of like, because you're half of you is sort of like bummed because, you know, the summer's over and maybe you didn't have, you know, you didn't win a bracelet and you kind of miss hanging out by the pool and drinking beer all day.
Right.
But the other half of you is so tired and so exhausted. Like, I think I slept for so many hours, so many days when I first got back. It was absurd.
Right.
Because I think you're like sort of mentally, physically, and emotionally drained by the time you leave Vegas. So yeah, it's kind of a, like I said, a tale of two worlds, but it's always kind of bittersweet.
What about you, Mark? I like that you call it summer camp because it reminds me of summer camp. No, it's like coming back to reality. Like, I mean, just, I didn't like pay any of my bills.
Like, you had the padlock on your door when you got home?
No, like my roommate was here and I was like, just make sure you get the mail and whatnot. But so I came back and it was just like, clusterfuck of bills, and I was just super stressed out. But you know,
right?
And it takes like a week or two to get back into the flow of things.
It does. It does. It took it for me, and I was gone for 5 days.
Plus, your sense of reality changes too, like in two ways. A, the whole time I was out there, I kept saying to the guys, "I think I've lost weight while I'm out here." And then I got back, and I was 6 pounds heavier than when I left. Like. That's completely fucked up. And then also, and this is the point that Carlos made while we were out in Vegas, which is that we live in this like little isolated world within the Rio and our house. And we kind of forget that there's like all this crazy shit going on in the world. Like that whole time, like there was police shootings in Dallas. There was like a revolt in Turkey.
France. Yeah, there was a bunch of like world incidents that happened.
Yeah,
there's all this crazy stuff going on, and it's almost like we kind of knew it was happening, but it's almost like it wasn't at the same time. It was really weird.
See, everyone should play poker. It would be a peaceful, peaceful world.
No, it would still be unpeaceful.
Yeah, you can see the house, like when people, like there was depression, anger. You get every aspect of it with poker.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah, I had my withdrawals. I for one, I'm going to try not to, since I can only come for, you know, a little while, I'm going to try to save that to the end of the series or near the end of the series, if not the main event, because it really was tough going out there the second week and then, you know, basically, you know, having that experience and then just being away from it while like the height of it was all happening. It's much better to have it to look forward to. So anyone, you know, poker fans who are gearing up and never gone to the series, definitely set it for later in the series because you get to enjoy that anticipation a lot longer, and then it's a little less depressing if, you know, if you're not seeing the whole poker world go on a frenzy for 3 more weeks after you left. So
the funny thing is you played more tournaments than Derek and I in 3 days. I can't forget it. Like, I was like, where's Diego? He's like, oh, going to play the PH like at 9 p.m. and then flying out at 6 a.m. And it's just like, so spoiled, Derek. Like, we're like, don't feel like playing today.
Look, if I was out there for the whole month, I would do the same thing. You know, I gotta get it in.
You couldn't have with the booth.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I feel like I get more and more comfortable every hour I sit at the table, and it's like, it's a shame to leave at that point because I feel like I'm just hitting the stride. But that's why when I got back, I actually went to the Borgata to play in a tournament a couple weeks later because I just feel like it was not out of my system. It's just, I just needed to play more. I actually have a hand from that too. So we should talk about that.
You're a sick man.
Yeah, he comes out there every year when Diego comes out, he's all happy, excited to play. And usually we're like 8 tournaments in.
Yeah.
Like, 0 caches.
Yeah, you guys are all the time by the time I get there.
It's tough. I mean, when did you come out this time? It was like
the second week, the Millionaire Maker.
Oh, the second week? Yeah, we weren't away then.
This time you guys were still kind of pumped up about it. And I think you guys all played the Millionaire Maker this time, right? Did we all play it?
I did.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I honestly cannot remember.
Yeah, a lot of times I come out there and then no one plays any of the tournaments I'm playing.
Like, well, the Millie Maker and like the tournaments like that,
Yeah.
Like you got to get out there for the tag team too. That's
so yeah. Cool. Well, you know, I got to say, I listened to your TPE live. You guys, oh, wow, great.
You actually listen to those?
I actually listened to those. Guys, great job. I great job on those this year. I you know, not to self congratulate, but you.
It's the first time you've ever complimented me. So thank you.
Listen here, you idiot. You did a really, really good job. No, I thought those were really, really I don't know if it's because I know you guys and like it felt like I was back sitting there around the, you know, around the table in the backyard talking about poker, but it does really draw people into to what goes on. So I don't know if people know to listen to that during the summer, but if you listen to this, you should definitely check out the TP lives that Derek and Mark and often Carlos do from the house during the World Series, because they talk about basically what's going on that day in the World Series. And
yeah,
house.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, so good. All right, so can I share a hand with you guys?
Yeah,
let's do one.
Okay, so I actually think I'll reserve my feelings on what I did. This could be elementary, but I had a question about it, so I'll present it and then ask my question. So this was at the Borgata, $500 buy-in, $1 million guarantee, $1 million guarantee that they had, that was basically two days after the main event. Of the World Series main event. So it was, just happened. And I basically sat down and within three hands doubled up with aces versus kings. We got it all in preflop, and I got all the chips. And
I think you played it great.
Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, that wasn't bad.
So should I fold and not risk my tournament life? no. So then I think it's like maybe an hour or two late. I don't remember how long later, but we start with 25K chips. I have 48K. We're at 200, 400. The table is pretty good. No real tough players. A couple of a lot of East Coast Borgata players, live players that, you know, you got like the Russian guy, you got the guy from the Bronx, you know.
I'm picturing in my head.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Table.
You know, there's the guy with like the Z Cavaricis. There's, you know, there you could picture the East Coast Borgata guys, right? And especially since the World Series is going on, you know, it's definitely, people have not come to this tournament from far away because it's just after during the main event. So so it's a typical East Coast Borgata crowd. And so there's a guy, the Russian-looking guy, you know, middle-aged Russian-looking guy who was like, you know, kind of winking at the table a lot and kind of just boisterous and, you know, a bit of a character, a bit of a show-off kind of guy. Once again, I think you probably know the stereotype that I'm.
Yeah,
I'm
no, you're painting a great picture. Actually.
Exactly. You know those guys. Yeah. No, you know those guys. So he for some reason I played maybe four hands in like 2.5 hours, and he for some reason, because of my aces over kings, he just felt like he knew me, like, you're the tightest guy at the table, like, and I was like, oh, okay, like, I, you know, and I didn't play a lot of hands, but he just like pegged me as like the tightest guy. Like, I think there was a hand where I did bluff a river, and he was just like, of course you got it, you never play a hand if you don't have it. Like, all right, dude, I've known you for like, and that was like
the knit image.
Yeah, exactly. But yes, actually it's funny you say that, because I there was a tweet where I did embrace the knit image, and I, you know, I opened what is it? I three bet like nine jack suited from the button, and then I smashed a flop, and no one knew. You know, there was just no way they didn't put nine jack suited, and I picked up a nice pot because of that. But anyway, that was after. Getting back to this hand, so that guy opens. We're at 200, 400. I have about 48K. He's got probably roughly the same, and he opens. I think he makes it 1,200. I think he just 3x's it. It folds. He's in like middle position somewhere. Like MP1 or MP2, and then it folds to the small blind, who was actually the nittiest guy at the table. He was like one of those. Put him in those like early 40s, wears a baseball cap, doesn't talk much. I don't know, you know, like what he's doing there, because he's not like clearly not a poker player, but didn't even like seem to be enjoying himself. But he played no hands. Like I don't think I saw him play a hand in like 2 hours. And so he just calls from the small blind. I'm like, okay, all right. Well, you know, that could be still be anything, but he calls. And then I just call with queen jack suited in the big blind. Okay, so to review,
is
and
small, is a small blind roughly as deep as you two? Like,
he's got like 33 or 34.
Okay, so we're like effectively really deep.
we're super deep. We're 200, 400. We're super deep, right? So I queen jack suited, and I just call.
Okay.
So the flop is 247, with two of my suit. I think it was diamonds. So I'm like, okay, it's pretty good. I checked. The small blind checked. I checked intending to check raise or check call. I mean, you know, this is a question I have because I typically don't play this deep. Like, would you guys check raise here, try to, you know, try to take it down, build a pot, or would you just check call and, like, try to actually even make more money if you hit your flush, or are you just happy to, like, take it down here with a bluff? Like,
it was seven. What was the board? Seven.
Two, four, seven.
Yeah, I mean, personally, me, like, this deep, I think check raising is totally fine because you can rep all that board.
Yeah.
Like, that's all the big blinds flatting range. Like, you have everything.
Yeah.
If right. It's just one bet, if it's just Russian guy bets, small blind folds, like, yeah, I would check raise. Yeah. Not trying to play a big pot because it's not really, like, it's not really my style in general. I'm just much more small ball, but
yeah.
You're
yeah.
So deep. Like,
right.
I want to get in more chips. Like two overs and a flush draw. And a lot of times he just folds the flop and we just take it, which is fine as well. Like,
right.
I think if we check call and a diamond comes, like, we're not going to win as big of a pot. So
okay.
I'm okay, like, yeah. Check raising. And if he does call, like, yes, we're putting in more money, but we also have a lot of equity.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Derek, yeah. What about you?
I'm pretty much the same way. Obviously it depends a lot on what the guy in between us does. Cause it was a small blind who flatted as well. Right.
Yeah, yeah, the tight small blind.
Yeah, so it depends on what he does, and it depends on sizing too. But I'm cool with check raising or just calling. Also, depending a little bit on like what we think of this villain, meaning like, do we think he's going to just want to put all the chips in here with like eights, you know?
Right.
Or
right.
Do we think he's just going to call and then like give up to more signs of strength? But yeah, either I think either are fine options. I don't feel incredibly strong towards either one, to be honest.
I would agree with that too, that I like both, but slightly like check raise. And if the small blind did call, I would be more inclined to raise. But
if the small blind, okay, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, because then you could get one of them out of there at least, and then maybe even both of them, and there's more in there for you to take.
Think like we can get this, like if the Russian guy ends up folding and the small blind calls, we could barrel him off
right.
a lot of turns. So yeah.
So if you're just, you know, I that's kind of, I mean, my intention of checking was to check raise. But I was going to play it by ear and see if I wanted to just check call or what. What if, you know, if he does, you know, if he does bet and then the other guy calls and then you have to make a, you know, a decent sized check raise and you whiff the turn, are you barreling the turn? I mean, I know it depends on the card and all the action, but are you willing to barrel the turn and the river, or are you just going to barrel the turn and kind of give up if you whiff the river? Like, are you willing to go that deep, you know, end up with a, you know, 15K, 16K stack if you get called down twice? And I know it's dependent on the next couple of, you know, actions, but that's what goes through my mind thinking of, like, do I really want to play a big pot here if I check raise and I have to kind of go two more streets with this?
For me, I think I would lean more towards just bombing really big on the turn and then giving up as opposed to like going two more like small to medium sized barrels.
Okay.
Yeah, I think both are good plays. Like Derek betting two thirds on the turn, or betting like one third and then pot on river. Like I like both. Again, this is going to be a feel thing. Like maybe you saw him like call a check raise before and fold. Call, turn, fold, river. Is he capped? Does he have any sets when he just calls? Probably not. Right. We have like the thing is we don't the thing I don't like about this board is we're really only check raising. Our perceived range is only sets. Like I don't think we have too many two pairs here.
Totally.
That's fine. That's fine. And, like, maybe some over pairs. We have, like, eights and nines, whatever. That's fine, but I think that's important to keep in mind. Like, maybe he's not going to know that, but against other good players, check calling may be better just because we don't have too many, like, nutted type hands when we check raise.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. All right, well, so, like I said, small blind checked, I checked, and then the middle position guy makes it. So it's about 4,200 in the pot, and, you know, I think he made it about 2.5K, 2.5K. And then the small blind made it 11K. and so obviously that changes changes. I didn't expect that action, and it obviously changes our situation. Before I get into what I did, you know, the reason I brought this hand is, you know, do we want to gamble? I mean, I'm assuming that someone has something here. Even if middle position doesn't have anything, obviously small blind is showing a lot of strength here. You know, I'm assuming he has a set and that's how he's playing it. Are we, you know, and when I say that, I feel like I know what I should do, but, are you guys ready to gamble for a giant stack? I will also say that the rebuy was in play still.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask because I don't think we should be necessarily always changing our decision based on the fact that we can re-enter. But I think it kind of comes into play here a little bit because, you know, you traveled here to play, obviously to play it. It's not like you grind tournaments, you know, live tournaments every day, seven days a week, you know? Yeah. So there is something to be said for like building a big stack. Or not,
right?
And you know, getting back to family and work and whatever else, you know. Like, yeah, there's kind of something to be said for that, but that doesn't change, I think, what the right poker decision is.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, I'm happy you said that because that's we should never go into a tournament with that attitude.
Yeah, I agree.
I see people doing it all the time in Vegas. Oh, there's people who do it all the time at the World Series. They're like, well, I'm going to go fire seven bullets. And it's like, you should try to fire one.
Yeah. And I mean, that's definitely a mentality going on at the Borgata. I mean, a $500 tournament. I mean, I think this guy actually, the Russian guy, I think he actually was on his second bullet. It definitely, there's a mentality of, hey, we could just rebuy it. And like, that said, I mean, I have a big stack. I mean, I have, like, if I fold here and just, you know, get away from it, like, I have nearly double the starting stack. And
you
have
put in 1,200 or 800 chips, actually, because you were in the big blind.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So anyway, so that's why I brought this hand because, you know, if I'm assuming I'm behind, but you know, who knows? I don't know. I doubt this guy is doing this with, you know, eights and nines, but so I don't think my queens or jacks are going to help me.
There could be a chance, though. I doubt it.
Could be a chance.
Well,
but... Yes. Yes. I'll give him a range, and that'll be part of his range. But I think it's a small part. But you know, I could also have, you know, 90K at 2-4, and I mean, spoiler alert, I don't think I got to 90K at all.
Did you have the tournament, so. Another bullet?
Was that?
Were you going to play another bullet?
Yeah, I was playing another bullet. This is the first bullet that there was a bunch of flights. This is the first flight I played. So I was prepared for more flights, more bullets, you know.
I think I'm folding just because, like you said, I think you're behind. The way you described the razor,
yes.
I mean, you're behind, I think, always.
It could be really behind, too, like if he has the nut flush draw.
Yeah, even when he's – like I don't think he's bluffing. So you're basically up against – another flush draw, which could be a bigger than yours, or, you know, sets, two pairs, things like that.
Yeah, I was afraid about bigger flush draw, too, for some reason. Yeah.
So here's a couple of things. Like, the Russian guy that C-bet actually C-bet really big. Like,
yes.
I think it was 3/4 or so.
Close to it, yeah.
Which I don't know if that was, like...
Two-thirds, I think.
If that was that his norm sizing?
Nothing like this played out exactly, but... That seemed normal for him. I don't think there was anything out of the ordinary for him.
Now, like, if you, I think things change here if we have like ace five of diamonds, or would 4-6 of diamonds is a gut shot?
Yes, it would be.
I'm not sure. I think I still fold that as well. But like
five six would be open ended.
Yeah, Oh, it was 7-4 deuce?
It was 7-4 deuce, yeah.
I kind of like the ace-5, though, because obviously the nut flush. We have an over if he's playing kings this way or queens. I think folding is best, but if you did bring another bullet, like, I still want to make the best poker decision, but if I feel like I can take over this table by winning a big pot, I would maybe get it in with the ace-5 of diamonds.
Right.
But not this queen jack of diamonds. I just think the way you described villain in the small blind as being too tight, I think he has a set too often, and we just don't have any fold equity, and we don't have the right price. Like, I'm guessing you folded.
Yeah, I folded. I mean, I folded pretty quickly because just my alarm bells were ringing off on the small blind. I mean, as I think most poker players would have alarm bells, it just like just seemed to me, it screamed to me that he was had a set. I folded. And middle
– he has all the sets, obviously. Like his
– Yes, yes.
All those pairs.
Exactly. Twos, fours, sevens, right. That's – yeah. And even like – yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, ace three or ace two, although I don't know he goes crazy with – I don't think he goes crazy with the flush draw, this guy. I think he just calls and tries to hit his flush.
Yeah, and what if the gentleman that c-bet two-thirds, the Russian guy, what if he just has like ace ten of diamonds?
That too.
You're just – yeah. Oh, no, you're not walking to your car because
– No. Walking to the cashier.
Walking to the ATM.
I mean, there's a lot of bad situations.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? That's like and I hate to give him credit for the hand. I just hate to look at, I think what's the term? Monsters under the covers? Is that the term where you like just
under the bed?
Monsters under the bed, yeah. Like you just assume that they have the top of their range. And you're afraid. Like, I've heard that term, and I think it's a good one. But that's kind of what I felt. I was like, okay, I feel like I'm dealing with the set versus a higher flush draw, and I'm crushed here. And I know, like, it's not, you know, I know you're supposed to size their ranges and, you know, sign them ranges, but I just felt like, at least on the small blind, I felt like I knew his range pretty well, and I wasn't going to win with if I hit a pair. So I just let it go.
Yeah, like, he's check-raising half his, you know, a third of his stack. So, yeah. Like... Yeah. He is not folding here, and like any time in this spot, I would like to have fold equity, if possible. So
yep, okay, yeah. So I did fold middle position, actually just called, and then the turn was a queen, but the small blind just let out 19K, and then the middle position just folded, and then I obviously didn't see his hand. He just, but that's the only time he did anything and the only pot he dragged in, so I have to assume he had a set.
I think it's the right fold.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, it feels like pretty obvious to me, but you know, when you're playing, like what was unclear to me was, is this a spot that I want to just gamble for a huge stack? Like, do I, even though I feel like I'm behind, is it worth giving it a shot? And what actually really rung to me was, Even if I do have the flush draw and I hit it, I could actually still lose his hand because someone might have a better flush draw.
Right.
So
the funny thing is like I not to say it again, but like if you have the nuts and like a gut shot, like it becomes closer to 50-50.
Yeah.
Like if you have like 5% fold equity, it makes it that much better.
Right.
I think you have 0% fold equity the way you're describing this guy.
Yep. Yep.
That kind of hurts us.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah, definitely would have been more interested if I had a gut shot with the ace. That would have, I probably would have had a hard time getting away from it. But I still might have done it, even though that would have been close.
Nitz will play like he. I don't know if he's ever going to flat kings. More than likely, Nitz just 3-bet those. But I could see him getting out of line with some over pairs, like even jacks. Like he just flats jacks and like check bombs it.
Yeah, because he's never 3-betting jacks. Like this guy is never 3-betting jacks.
Yeah, but he made check raise versus this guy whose standard c-bet sizing is 2/3. Like you know, like he's probably not thinking like, oh, he's c-betting.
Yeah, I mean, now that you say it that way, he could be playing jacks this way because I think he doesn't want to play jacks after the flop. He's afraid to.
But it's a small part of his range.
Yes, it's a small part, right.
It's a part of it, but that like, I mean, actually, queen jack suited probably plays better than ace-5. Two overs. But for me, I just want to have that out in case he has a set. Like, having that gutter would just give us
another four. Another three cards.
Wow. Yeah. We're professionals.
Wait, you said a gutter. That'd be another four, wouldn't it?
No.
One of them's a diamond.
God, man.
Okay, all right. We'll get this right one, you know, maybe on our 10th year anniversary.
I got a great training site.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you should watch my new video coming out on August 5th, by the way.
All right, good. Okay. All right. Well, thanks. I just wanted to confirm that.
Yeah, I actually think that's a really interesting hand because I think a lot of amateurs probably just like gamble. But again, like KB said, like when we're at a table, we want to just make the best poker decision.
That's right.
And if we do that every single time we play poker, that's how we make money.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep.
All right.
Cool. All right.
Speaking of making money.
Yeah, let's talk to somebody who actually made some
money.
Where's
our celebrity?
Yeah, let's get Chris in here. We'll take a quick break to get technologically prepared, if you will. But we'll be right back with Mr. Christopher Kusha right after these words.
If you are looking for the best MTT training site on the planet, look no further than TournamentPokerEdge.com. Tournament Poker Edge focuses exclusively on multi-table tournaments and features some of the best live and online pros. No waiting for cash game videos looking for the occasional tournament video. Tournament Poker Edge also offers strategy articles, forums, a member chat room, and much more. So visit TournamentPokerEdge.com and start taking your game to the next level now.
Welcome back to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. Time to bring in our VIP guest.
Yes. Celebrity.
That's the word I'm going with anyway.
Celebrity.
VIP guest.
Absolutely.
Longtime TP member and the deepest I know anyway, of anybody I know, the deepest run in the main event this year, Mr. Chris Kusha. How's it going, my friend?
Welcome. Pretty good. Chris. How's it going, guys?
Great. Welcome. Good.
Yeah, congrats, first of all, on the outstanding run.
Thank you.
So I told somebody the other day that we were doing this podcast with you, and I said something to them that I'm not sure if this is 100% true, but I feel like it might be. Have you been to every TPE meetup?
Every TPE meetup?
I mean, I know you were at the one in AC.
Yeah, he was certainly – Chris, you were certainly at the first one because I remember talking to
definitely.
You.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I remember that's where I met Casey when he went on a – he was on a sick run.
Yes.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, and then – I mean, at least a few in Vegas, I think.
I don't think he was there the first –
I wasn't there last year.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah, because last year I only came out for some prelims, and I think you guys did it later on towards the main.
All right, so I lied to somebody. But you're certainly – The only member I know who's been here since the very first one, so we'll just go with that.
Yeah. It was great to see someone who does come to so many of them have the deep run. Like, if we could have picked anyone, you know, aside from Pierre, Pierre's like the yes, I would love for Pierre to win the main event, absolutely. But
yeah, that's actually a good point, and I shouldn't slight Pierre because he was at that first Borgata meetup too.
Yeah, but I remember you, Isaac, who I don't know if he's as active as he was, but he's been a member for a long time. Yeah, so you guys are old school. So really happy to see that for you.
Yeah, I mean Pierre and I have become pretty good friends through TPE.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
And you guys probably play a lot of the same events and stuff up there. Right.
Yeah. We're in a lot of the East Coast events. So we'll end up like hanging out, go to dinner sometimes, talk hands. And
yep.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, let's before we get into the main event stuff, we should back up a little bit because I do want to talk a little bit about your background and your story coming up in poker and all that stuff. So let's go back to, when you got into poker. Talk a little bit about what brought you into it and what got you to take it more seriously eventually.
So I would be playing with some friends in high school, And, you know, just typically how a lot of people did, like, you know, three or four guys playing for $5 a man, and we would play, like, you know, little sit and goes with terrible structures.
But, those are the best.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You know, may or may not have had some beers involved.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm a very, like, competitive kind of person. So I eventually wanted to start winning them. I mean, everybody wants to win, and especially when there's money involved.
Sure.
So I went to a bookstore, and I found I can't even remember the book. I think it was just like called Winning Hold'em. Mm-hmm. And I picked that up and read it, and then went back and started winning a lot more since I, you know, just learned basics about position and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that, like, when you're first starting out, you can make a massive jump just by making a very, very slight effort to get better. Like, I know for me, like, my first book was Harrington on Hold'em, and it just, like, changed my life.
Yeah.
Just, like, I was like, oh, you're supposed to actually pick certain hands to play.
Exactly.
How did you pass on Super System? How is Harrington on Hold'em your first book?
Because I just like tournaments.
That's a crime.
Yeah.
I just like tournaments. And I looked through – I remember looking through Super System and being like, stud.
Yeah.
Like, stud. All the No Limit stuff.
I'm with Derek. I was Harrington on Hold'em was the – Harrington was the tournament book, and that's really what I was mostly interested in.
That was your first book? Oh, my God.
I actually don't think it was my first book, but I think I read that before I read Super System. Like, I read some other bad stuff, but, you know, like T.J. Cloutier.
Chris, I would bet Chris read Super System because you're also really good at all the mixed games as well.
I did, yeah. Super System kind of got me into mixed games. So, actually, here's how that all started. I used to play on Full Tilt in, like, early college, and mostly, like, for play money because I didn't have a way to get money online. And the No Limit Hold'em free rolls would fill instantly.
Yeah.
Like, within seconds.
Right.
So I ended up having to play the Raz and Horse. So I picked up Super System. I read every page of the draw chapter, even though, like, whoever gets to play 5-card draw.
Yeah.
I read all of those, learned all the games. And my very first tournament wins were actually in Horse and in Raz. And then even on Stars when I would play, or like Full Tilt and Stars, I would play like $1 Raz tournaments and have a little bit of success there. I still think Raz is one of my strongest games besides No Limit Hold'em.
That's so awesome. This actually is off topic, but it makes me realize that we blew a huge opportunity the years we've been in Vegas. We really need to go back to Green Valley Ranch and get a mixed game going.
Mm-hmm. 8-game. We have to be playing Triple Draw as well.
Yeah, Triple Draw is one of my new favorite games now. It's by far my favorite. Such a great game.
All right, so let's go ahead and just plan for that next year right now. So
I had a question for Chris. He mentioned being super competitive. Was there anything prior to poker where you were super competitive, whether it be sports, chess, video games? Because I find that a lot of people we talk to say the same thing, but it comes from something when they were a child.
Yeah, so probably a mix. I would play a lot of handball in high school, and there's a very competitive scene there with a lot of the guys in New York. I would also play a lot of video games too, although I never really played video games competitively. And what else? There's something big I'm missing here. It was on the tip of my tongue as you were asking the question.
So it's just like you hate losing, or you just love winning, or a mixture of both? Because I feel like I hate losing. I don't know. That's pretty close to me.
It's like I like doing things and being good at them. Yeah, I think pool was another one for me that I used to, you know, sort of have, you know, friends who were into pool, and we would play a lot, and we would be competitive with each other, play against each other for money and stuff like that.
See, it's funny. I think there's something interesting about people like that, like you. Like, my dad is kind of like that. When he gets into something, he tries to become the best at it, like, no matter what it is, like tying flies or like fishing or whatever.
Right, exactly.
I'm more of like, I'm like mediocrely good at a lot of things, but not very good at
podcasting, running a business, life.
Yeah. Drinking.
I'm great at drinking. Yeah, you're the best at that, though.
It's the one thing I've mastered.
I've not mastered drinking.
Oh, just hang on with me. I'll take care of it.
No, don't. You'll be on the toilet. Just look at my track record this year in Vegas. I was hugging the toilet at 5 a.m. twice, thanks to Derek.
That's how we roll.
Not a very good teacher.
Yeah. So, Chris, let me ask you, can we talk a little bit about your approach? Because one thing that stood out to me, even way back when on the first meetup, is that, I'm not surprised that you have had success and made a deep run like this, because in talking to you, I think you have a very analytical approach to the game. You are a math teacher. Is that correct?
Yeah. Math? So right now I'm teaching at a college in New York.
Okay. Yeah. So, struck me as someone who kind of looks at the game different than the average, guy playing poker with his friends, even though you described yourself early on as that kind of person. How would you describe your game, your approach to the game, how you look at it, et cetera?
So I try to look at things in a mathematical sense. I've tried to look at a little bit of the game theory.
Right.
And definitely think an analytical approach is right. I try to look at my ranges in certain situations and my opponent's ranges and try to figure out not only what's the best play for my particular hand, but what do I want to be doing with a certain range and stuff like that.
So with that mindset, how do you combine that with, and I'm not trying to make this a commercial for TPE, but mm-hmm. how do you combine that with, being a member of a training site, for people out there who go to training sites and watch videos and, maybe want to do more or are looking for the way to really integrate them into their learning. What did you do? Did you sit down and do math? You watch a video. I'm just curious, from the member perspective, how you consumed, the videos and the product and then, translating that into success.
Yeah, so I got to give a big shout out to Andrew Brokus.
Yeah,
coaches on here, and yep. I think he really puts it best in that when you're watching these videos, you really want to do so actively. You want to pause, and rather than just listen to the coaches talking about their decisions, think about think as if you were playing the spot.
Totally.
And then after you hear the coach explain their thought process, and then you can agree or even disagree, but then, try to figure out why and what they're doing, what you're doing differently.
That's great. Yeah, it's almost like having the answer to a test, that you can just look at the answer after you've actually asked the question. After you answer the question, you can look up the key.
Right, exactly.
And it's right there for you.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're sitting there looking at a problem and then you just watch me solve it, that doesn't really do anything for you.
Right.
But if you try the problem on your own, you see where the common mistakes are.
Yep.
Then it's going to make a lot more sense when we go through it.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I assume that when you first kind of started taking poker more seriously, you played primarily online?
I played a little mix because, online was easier because you had Full Tilt and PokerStars. And I first decided to start taking it seriously in 2010. I kind of just did a little bit of a mix of everything from 2007 to 2010. And I remember I'd won a couple of 45-mans and I had $800 in my Full Tilt account.
Uh-huh.
And I primarily play cash. So I decided, all right, I'm going to learn how to multi-table, full ring, 25 NL, grinded my way through that, and it would make maybe anywhere from $600 to $1,000 a month. Eventually moved up to 50 NL, kept going, dabbled in tournaments here and there, would have, varied measures of success. And I ended up getting up to 100 NL by the time Black Friday hit. And right before Black Friday, I was getting a little burned out with cash. I'd probably played maybe 300,000 hands in 2010.
Wow.
Which to me was just a ton. I know people play a million every year now. But I was never really a full time. I'll just play for an hour or two a day. And I'd eventually switched over to tournaments because I found them more interesting at the time. And then sure enough, as I started doing that, then Black Friday hits a few weeks later.
Yeah.
But I also play a decent amount live too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess the bright side is for you, at least with Black Friday, is that you had live to go to. Like, that was an option for you.
Yeah, so I was actually – so there's a lot of – there's a decent amount of underground games in New York, as I'm sure you guys could imagine. And I used to work at one. I used to play sometimes, but then I would also deal. And funny enough is once the online gravy train slowed down, I'm like, all right, well, at least I have this live game. And then 3 weeks later, every game on Staten Island got raided by the feds.
Oh, jeez.
Luckily, it was like an off night in our spot and nothing happened. Like, nobody got in trouble. Like, we were sharing a place. We ran like a 1-2 game with a place that ran like 5-5 and 5-10. So they were really after those guys. So thankfully nothing happened there, but then the underground scene pretty much died there too, and it was just like a double whammy.
Yeah. Wow.
When Black Friday hit, like, did you go to all the other sites, like the U.S. sites that were kind of scummy, you know, Carbon, Merge, whatever? Did you go to those or did you wait?
I waited initially first. I did play a little bit on Carbon, like – I mean, before I had found Full Tilt, I basically played on every site that like would let me make an account, like just trying to get free money on there. I remember Carbon used to run like free rolls where you would win a 6-man sit and go, and then a step 2 6-man sit and go, and then a step 3 10-man for a dollar. And then I'd go and dust that dollar off in like 2 cent, 4 cent.
I used to be kind of the same way. I would site hop. I would just clear deposit bonuses because I was playing sit and goes. I didn't care where I played. In fact, like playing, if I could take it all back, I probably would have played. I wouldn't even played on stars just because my ROI was like way higher on any of those withered US sites. But yeah, I think, I mean, sounds like you had a, like, so you were already a member of all these sites. You knew they existed.
Yeah. But I mean, my problem was that like my only credit cards or whatever were from the banks, and like I couldn't use them to get money on the sites. Like, yeah, I had actually never made a deposit on Full Tilt Poker. The way that I had gotten money was one of the underground games that I played. A guy in the game was a sit and go pro on Full Tilt, and I would give him $100 and he would transfer it to me to my account. So I'd never actually deposited myself.
Those were the good old days when you could just get money so easily. Yeah. Get money off so easily. Like, you just needed to know somebody and just be like, oh, you need cash? Here you go.
Yeah, I mean, even now, like, just it's so sketchy. Like, I had put on I played on America's Card Room or something. And I remember like having like hit up Dipthrong to get money on there because like I tried depositing with a card and it came from like some kind of weird thing was activating fraud alerts, and I was just like, I just don't want to have any part of that.
Yeah, my wife keeps asking me why I keep sending money to dating sites. I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
That's not a dating site, I promise. Cool. Pretty funny.
Wells Fargo, for whatever reason, seems to be the best with poker sites. For anyone trying to deposit on these withered American sites, bank with Fargo. Like, it works.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's no Wells Fargo in Staten Island. I don't know if they're in New York at all. And now, thankfully, I don't have to touch any of these sites because I have New Jersey right over the bridge and there's PokerStars there.
Yeah, there you go.
It's nice.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So you've started playing on there a little bit then?
Yeah, so like I'll drive over the bridge and hop over to the library. This sounds like something Carlos would do, right?
No, he would be in a library parking lot.
The library parking lot in the van. So, yeah, I would just go to the parking lot, take my laptop with me. And nice. just like sit inside a cubicle, throw on my headphones, and just grind away for a few hours.
That's awesome.
How does the traffic seem on Stars New Jersey so far?
It's okay. It seems kind of reggy at times. I mean, for a while the games are really good, and then like the 100 and 200 at NL, like sometimes they're good, sometimes it's just like I see like the same four people that I see every time I sign on. Doesn't matter if it's like 9 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning. It just seems like the same people just on 24 hours, it feels like. Yeah.
I suppose, yeah. As much as like it's good for recreational players to have a site to play on like that, a lot of them are just going to get cut down pretty fast, I would guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's just like the nature of the beast of online. It's that you play so many more hands fast, so people are going to lose their money faster.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Cool. Well, take us to the let's go to the main to the World Series of Poker actually. So you came this year. So you came out. How long were you out in Vegas for? Were you for the whole series? Or did you come out for a stretch of time?
Yeah, so this is the first time I came out for pretty much the whole series. I came in right after the Colossus. My father's 50th was happening during the Colossus, and so I wanted to be there for that. And then also the way that they butchered the structure this year, I really didn't want to have anything to do with that.
Right. Not even worth playing. I never want to play it again.
No, honestly, I think my hourly would be much better in like a 2-5 game than it would be in the Colossus.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
We talked about that this summer at the end of the year. We've already decided we're not playing the Colossus.
Same with the 888 tournament. They're just horrible.
Yeah, like, skip that one too.
And the problem I have with it too is like the recs that come out and play those events, they're in for like 20 minutes or an hour. Like there's no play in it. So like all these people that travel to come play in their first World Series event basically take it in the butt. I mean, it's horrible. Like they get an hour of play.
Yeah. I mean, last year was a little better because it was 40-minute levels for 10 levels. Here it's 30-minute levels for 18. Like, it's just way too shallow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And no shocker, everyone was bulleting four times. Like,
yeah, it seemed like a lot of people were leaving that part of the series with a very, like, sort of bitter taste in their mouth, which is not what you want to do for an event that's designed to bring in new players.
Yeah, my Twitter timeline was littered with fire and five bullets, min cashed once, or time for bullet number six. And I'm like, I remember I even, like, tweeted in jest. I was like, didn't lose $3,000 in the Colossus, so I'm ahead of a lot of people already.
Yeah. And you were playing a ton of PLO, it seemed like. It seemed like whenever we saw you, like, you'd stop by the booth and say hello and stuff, and you were grinding the PLO pretty heavy.
Yeah, because last year I noticed when I played at the Rio, the No Limit Cash games were okay, but the PLO games were really good. And so I decided, like, that was going to be my approach going into Vegas this year, was to play more PLO than No Limit. I found some really good games. I just ran pretty poorly in them. I ended up getting crushed like the second day I was here.
Oh, when I talked to you at the TP meetup, you were getting crushed.
Oh yeah, like I was stuck like $1,500, $2,000 like the second day I was here, and I was playing 1-2. Like it was absurd.
That's why I don't play PLO.
But it was a really good game. It was a 1-2 10-30. $10 straddle every hand, and one guy made it 30 like 80% of the time, and it was amazing.
Did you play any mixed game tournaments, or are you sick just No Limit?
I actually at Binion's and the Golden Nugget, I found out that they run a lot of mixed game stuff at a very affordable price point. They run like these $240 tournaments. So I played I played 8-game mix. I played a stud 8 or better that I final tabled. Fake final table to finish ninth.
Saw the final table.
Yeah. I mean, we were physically at one table, but studs really 8-handed.
Okay, right.
They had a triple stud game, which was stud 8 or better, and Raz, which was a lot of fun.
Ah, oh, sick.
Yeah, so they had all these different variants and like horse and stuff, and it was nice because I wasn't able to really sell much action for like the 1500s. So I couldn't play the 1500 horse, which was one of the ones I really wanted to play. So I figured I'd take that money and hop in some of the 200s that I can afford to play.
There you go.
Well, you'll be able to sell action next year.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, the funny thing was he snap sold for the Borgata. It was sold in like maybe 2 hours, it seemed. And I remember you with your main, you had a little problem selling. Yeah.
The main was tough. I dropped it down to par and just I don't know. It was really weird because I had no problem selling last year, and last year I made everybody money on the package. Like we maybe had like a 40-50% ROI. But for some reason people didn't want to buy this year. I don't know.
You know what? In general, and I think KB can say this as well, people just were not buying as much this year.
The market was
a little dry, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely very dry.
I found sort of the same thing. I mean, I almost didn't play the main. I basically just had somebody swoop in at the very last second to take up enough of the action that I could, but I almost didn't play it. And I think a lot of people had trouble selling just from talking to other people and stuff.
It was the same for me, except I was the one that swooped in and saved it. I decided to fire the win 550 and had a cash in that for like 2000. And then the day before I registered, I was playing in a 2040 mix game, and I just ran like God for like the whole day, and ended up making like 50-60 big bets.
Oh, this is the greatest story ever. So you ended up buying a bigger chunk of yourself.
Yeah. So it was like, so it was like my friends were sitting there thinking, because I originally planned on selling 80, and my friends are wondering, like, are you going to play if you don't sell all of it? And then, like, after that, I was just like, I'm like, you know what? We're playing. It doesn't matter what happens. We're playing one day.
it seems like it was meant to be. It's so great.
Yeah, so it's nice. So I definitely had more of myself than I originally planned, and you know, worked that's out good. For me.
It worked out okay.
That's my favorite part. That I had more of myself than I wanted to.
Yeah. Was this your first time playing the main?
Second time.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking that you had played once before, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I played it back in 2014 and busted in like day two or something, like day two after dinner break.
Right on. So this year was a little different because they kind of mixed up the structure a little bit. So in the past, you started with 30K. This year, you started with 50K, but you also skipped an early level or two, I guess. Like, I guess we skipped 50, 100, and 100, 200 maybe? I forget exactly what was removed, but just in general, what did you think of the structure?
I think the structure was very good. Like you said, because of the changes to the first couple of levels, is really like effectively the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like you started with 300 big blinds. So it used to be 50, 100, 30K stack. Now it's 75, 150, 50K stack. So you're starting with like... okay, like 320 something big blinds. It's not really that big of a difference.
Right.
And I think the way it ended up being was like it made it seem like it was like one level faster. Mm-hmm. But then you have 40% or 60% extra chips. It really didn't change it that much, I felt like, from the pace of playing it before.
Yeah, it didn't feel super different to me either, with the exception of just like when you sit down, you're kind of like, wow, that's a lot of orange chips. This is cool.
Yeah, I mean, just
but effectively, it was the same. Yeah,
it's amazing structure in general.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's still just an amazing structure.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
I was gonna ask you a question about your general approach, because you kind of hear these different philosophies about how to approach the main event because the structure is just so damn good and the competition is so soft. So there's kind of like these opportunities to really build up a huge stack day one, but you also don't need to force the action. So I'm kind of wondering if you went into it with any sort of general plan, like, okay, I'm going to, you know, play a ton of pots with fish and try to, you know, double up early or at least double up day one? Or did you just kind of say, all right, I'm just going to go in and take it as it comes and see what the poker gods give me?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really – so my day one approach really is just based more on like the fact that we're so deep. So the way I'm going to play hands is going to be a little different. So like I'm not going to for example, if I'm facing an open, like I might be more apt to flat hands like queens or jacks rather than three bet, especially pre ante. Whereas, you know, when you're shorter, you might want to three bet to try to get them in pre flop, mm-hmm. and more apt to three bet like other kinds of hands, like maybe like 9-7 suited, because you're so deep that when you get called and you can like, you know, push around post flop. I wasn't really in either camp of like, we're just going to try to run it up crazy or like, I'm just going to play like a nit, but rather, I mean, I think the approach really is just, you know, I see who's at the table and see what I can do. Like I ended up having like a tough European player directly to my left and then a very aggro Brazilian guy to his left. So that ended up making me play pretty tight overall. Like, and I just tried to wait for good hands and good spots.
Yeah.
Did you have any like absolute fish? Like, just you're like, okay, this guy is gonna double me up. Because in the years I played it, that just seems. I have had one or two at every table, which has been love day one.
Yeah, there were a couple of guys. I mean, so when I played in 2014, only one person busted, and that was Carter Gill, like right at the end of the night. But this year we lost like three or four people. Like we lost someone in the second level. Like people were definitely pushing the action more. There were a couple of special ones. I mean, I don't remember particulars, but I remember like watching hands and just being like, phew. What are you doing?
That's so funny. I know, like, a lot of people just sort of set the goal of, you know, bagging chips, making the next day, which is not the worst strategy if you can do it 7 or 8 times in a row. Were there points in, like, late in day one or late in day two where you kind of went into that mode, like, all right, we're in a good spot here, let's not, you know, do anything crazy, just bag up some chips and go on to the next day?
Yeah, I had Pierre whispering that into my ear the entire tournament. just bag, man. Because I ran it up to like 110K by dinner of in the first day, and then by the end of level 4, I had like 40K. I tried to like run a big bluff, and guy had a hand that I just didn't expect to be in his range at all. So like I'm trying to bluff this guy off a set that I never thought he would have to begin with.
Right.
So like, you know, usually that doesn't work out too well.
And I saw Chris tweeting, and I actually got a bit worried about him. I was like, hey bro, like calm down. Like there's so much left, because you weren't tooling out or anything, but it seemed like you were a little flustered, and I was like, damn dude, just like calm down, like do not worry, like you have
no,
like,
yeah,
this is day one. I'm like you know, because we became friends and I was following all the TP members and pros, but yeah,
the feeling is hard to escape. I mean, when you get up to 110, you think like that, you know, you feel so good, you're comfortable, and then you know how it
right.
is.
Yeah,
taking something away hurts more than it hurts more to have something taken away than the joy you get from getting something, right? So I think that's what happened there.
Yeah, and the thing is, you just have to realize, like, I have 70 big blinds still. Yeah. You know, like that. So my mental coach told me, he's like, don't try to have 300 big blinds. Just know you have 70 and play that stack now.
I just try to convince myself I just doubled up from like a half of the stack I have now. So like I try to mentally make believe like I can't. I went from 18K to 40K, and that instead of going down from 110, and that kind of helps actually.
Yeah, when I got down to like 25K or whatever on day one, I tweeted it, and I think I said this to Mark and people at the house too on dinner break. I just walked around and looked for people with like 10K.
And it made
me feel so much better.
That's like, a great idea.
And I tweeted at one point, I said, watching people busting the tournament and leave the Rio is making me feel a lot better about my stack. And it's true. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of mean, but it's true.
Okay. So. Right, exactly. You always have more chips than the people who aren't there at all.
And I didn't play this year, and I remember, Derek, when you did take a hit, and I remember tweeting at you like, you're in the main event and you're there right now and you have a shot, and you have, I think it was like, you have 100 big blinds, so what? And that's the rationale you need to have when you're playing.
Yeah. It is actually really good to have. It's one of the things that's good about, well, A, having sort of people on social media cheering you on or talking in your ear, but also having people right there in the Rio to kind of talk you off the ledge once in a while, because it's pretty easy to get yourself, especially after a long summer in Vegas of grinding, and if it hasn't gone well, it's pretty easy to like find yourself standing on a ledge about ready to take a leap.
So Chris, what day did you say? I'm sorry if I missed it. What day did you play, A, B, or C?
I played C.
You played C, okay. And any particular reason why?
Well, mostly because I needed to give myself as much time as I could to get the money together.
Right. You registered at what, like 11 a.m.?
Yeah, no, I actually wanted to play day B, and then I had friends telling me, like, B is the worst, either play A or play C. And then on day A, there was a satellite that I wanted to play, so I played in that.
Uh-huh.
But so I couldn't play day A, and then day B ended up being the day that I like had the huge cash game win.
Got it. Okay. Awesome. Perfect. That works. Cool. And did you I don't know if there were any interesting hands, but what did you bag on the end of day one?
Day one, I bagged, I want to say, like a little less than starting. I don't remember if it was in the 40s or not. Yeah.
I mean, that tells you right there, like, it doesn't matter.
Not at all.
40. You know, you're coming back to what, 4.8 or 3.6? I forget what they was this year.
3.6, I think it was.
I remember Dylan had like 18K this year. TPE Pro, that's videos coming out soon. He had 18K in a level and a half, I believe, he went up to 463K. So it's like, I think he had 12 big blinds, or no, 13 or 14.
Wow,
and then
that's
spun it up to 463K, which is like, yeah.
That's pretty
so
sick.
Don't give up, I guess. You know, like, I mean.
Oh, yeah. So Chris, I found it. I bagged 47.7.
Okay.
47-7, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you'll have to remind me, Chris, because I'm trying to remember. I feel like Dave 1 through 3, like, you had not accumulated, like, a monster stack yet, right? Like, no. All those days, you were kind of – I mean, you didn't have bad stack, but you were – you know,
yeah, like day three is really where, like, I finally started to get some chips. Yeah, like, day two was a better table draw than day one, and then it was just a complete grind. And I remember even being down to 20 bigs on day two. But people just lose their mind. Like, I remember opening the button with aces with 20 bigs, and guy in the big blind just ripped king seven off into me, and then now I'm back in the tournament.
Yeah,
there you go.
There you go. So tell us.
I actually feel like you stopped by the booth right around that time, if I remember. Yeah. That's great.
So how was your day two table? How'd you categorize it? Tough? Anyone good or anyone notable?
It wasn't too bad. And then as the people started busting, I ended up starting getting, like, tougher players on my left again.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this is basically the story of the whole tournament. Is I did not have, like, a good table draw, like, any,
oh, really?
I did not have a good table draw, like, any day of this entire tournament. it was always like, if they were good players, they'd always be on my left.
Right. That's annoying.
Yeah. So yeah, day two was really just a grind.
Yeah. And so how did you end up day two?
Day two, I ended up with 95. Okay. Yeah, 95,000, halfway through, 1,000, 2,000.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, and which, again, just goes to show you, like, you know, basically starting day three with only double what you started with, but you still have heaps.
Yeah, like 40, like,
just a testament
days
to that structure. Yeah, it's absurd. But it's awesome.
Nice.
So at what point, like, was it day three where you started to kind of go, well, okay, I might actually make a run in this damn thing?
Yeah, I actually thought on day three I was going to be like, well, I'm going to almost make the money and just bust, because I had a dynamite lineup there. I had Amir Leavon, Marc-Andre Ladasor right next to me. I had Sergey Rybachenko and some other guy who was, like, number one or two in Australia. So I had almost like a star-studded table. But thankfully, a lot of these guys were either on my right or, like, all the way down the table. But yeah. but Amir and Marc-Andre had huge stacks.
Amir final table domain, and didn't Mark make a deep run, or did he final table as well? I can't remember.
I think he made two deep runs.
Marc-Andre, I want to say, made day seven twice. And, yeah, and Amir finished, I think, third in 2011 or 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, so
super, and a super smart guy too, because I remember on the Thinking PokerCast, they had who's the amateur from last year? Neil.
Blumenthal.
Yeah, yeah. So
from San Francisco, and then I think Amir's from SF.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah. Amir was like sort of like his mentor, and just hearing about the things that they would do, and I knew Amir was a real sharp guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with that sort of lineup of death, did you just kind of go with a little bit of a tighter approach?
Yes. I mean, I immediately would, like, lose half my chips to Marc-Andre. I'd three bet him with ace king of hearts, and got the jack 8-3 one heart flop. I end up checking it back, which people said that I probably should have c-bet. Pick up the 10 of hearts turn, call his bet, just brick everything.
why do that? That's interesting that people said the c-bet, because I think with a heart we should always be checking back there. And yeah, like, I guess there's an argument where, like, you can barrel a heart, so maybe betting is better. But I'm, like, always checking back there. Jack 8x. Yeah. I want to realize my equity. I don't want to get check raised or something.
Right, exactly. I feel like that's going to be close enough to, like, his range that's going to hit him harder than it's going to hit me most of the time.
Right.
Absolutely.
That, like, I think he's going to – and he's – and, you know, a smart player like him is going to know that and, like, press his advantage. And, like, plus he just has tons of chips.
Like, honestly, had there been no heart there, I'm c-betting 100% of the time. But with a heart, like, yeah, I want to see some turns.
Yeah. And on that turn, like, I don't think that I should – I think the play is just a call there.
Oh, yeah, I don't think we could be raising either. You're not repping.
Not really repping anything, yeah.
Yeah, what was the turn?
The Ten of Hearts. So I pick up I pick up the two overs in the Royal draw.
And if you raise there, I don't know how deep you are, but, like, yeah, absolutely raise. We don't need to be raising.
Yeah, like, I know I had 58K after the hand, so I would have, like, 30 bigs. If I – 29 bigs after I had missed.
Yeah, so, like, you raise the turn and he piles. You're like, cool. Like,
yeah, or actually, I think my raise would have to be a shove if I raise the turn.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I like calling anyway.
Which may or may not have worked. Who knows? So, yeah, so at 1,200, 2,400, I had 16 bigs.
Wow.
I guess you could rep, like, 10s. That's it.
Yeah, that's pretty narrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so remember, so the 1,200, 2,400 was, like, the magic level, because I started that level with 16 bigs and then ended with 300K.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah. And was that, like, mostly a couple of big pots, or was that just...
Yeah, so that was like the first key hand. So at first I got a shove through and then won a flip for like 40K. And then I had won another pot. I don't exactly remember how, but I was up to about 130, 140. And then I had a big hand against Amir where I pick up 7-6 suited under the gun plus one. It's 1,200, 2,400. I raised to 5,200, which is my standard. Amir flats the button, and I think I'm not sure if the big blind called as well. Probably can't imagine why they wouldn't.
They may have failed math. They didn't have you as a teacher
at this at this table. People were defending like almost always.
Yeah.
I have 7-6 of clubs, and the flop comes deuce 3-5 with two spades. So it's checked to me. I bet 6,500. Decide that this is probably like one of the worst hands in my range, and I have, you know, the gutter, right, and the two overs. So I bet 6,500. Amir floats me on the button, and they beat the big blind folds. The turn is a queen of diamonds. I decide to keep barreling. I bet 13,000. He calls again.
Well, let me ask you something now. Mm-hmm. Are you going three?
Yes, my plan was to fire on blank rivers too.
Okay, cool.
I mean, there's maybe a couple of rivers. Like, I don't know if I'm going to bet an ace river
or like a seven or six. You may still be bluff. Yeah, I think you still probably have to turn your
hand. I think I might just turn my hand into a bluff and just bet. Yeah, because because he's in position and he's going to be able to just put me in a really bad spot if I check to him, and now he like overbet shoves or something, which. It's definitely in his arsenal.
Oh, absolutely.
So the river comes an amazing card.
Four hearts!
The non-spade four.
That's beautiful.
And I decide, like, well, I can have a lot of ace-x. You know, I'm repping hands like ace-queen when I bet the turn. So I decide to continue betting. I bet, like, 25-6. And Amir tanks for maybe, like, half a minute. And puts me all in for like 100K more or 90K more. And obviously I snap, and he has two sixes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would bet he's bluffing here.
Like, no, he's not bluffing. So the final board is deuce 3-5, queen 4. He's looking at two of the sixes in his hand, like, how can I have a six?
Yeah.
So
he's shoving for value against.
Oh, I didn't realize he had a straight. That's
great. Yeah, so that's pretty sick that. Yeah,
and you can have so many aces.
Right, exactly. Like I have.
Doesn't
more
mean you.
Aces
doesn't mean you will call, but it means you're more likely to call, I guess.
Right.
That's pretty sad.
Wow.
It's hard for me to put him on much 6x there. Anyway, like you'd have to have 6-5 that he's going to call twice with.
Right.
Or yeah. Or 6-4 was already there from the get go.
Wow, that's a big hand.
Yeah, there. His jam is actually really good. I mean. Chris isn't going to call with any aces probably, but he doesn't know that.
Yeah, he doesn't know that.
It's going to be pretty close.
Right, yeah. I mean, to Amir, I'm just somebody who just gave his chips to Marc Andre.
Yeah, he might just think of you as a fish. Which actually, this reminds me, not to get off topic too far, but we should talk about the card protectors.
Yeah.
So this was a strategy, right?
Oh, like, I love this.
Not exactly a strategy. So I remember like a long time ago, I had went to a movie with a friend, and in the movie theaters, they have those little like crane games. And as I was online buying snacks, she went to the crane game and got like a little rubber duck. And she's like, here, you know, she gave it to me. And she said, all right, when you go to AC, like, you know, you should use it. I'm like, all right. That was around the time of the first Borgata Million, when they did the $560 tournament with the million guaranteed. And I ended up taking like 36th in that. And I'd had that's the chef duck that I'd had.
Yeah.
And so it was getting some media coverage because people were, you know, we were on break and like one of the bloggers came by and took a picture of the duck and they're like, whose is this? You know? So eventually that kind of stuck with me and decided like, hey, you know, this is like, you know, a little bit of like branding. So
there you go.
I went with that. And then over the years, you know, people will give, like, mostly my girlfriend would give me the other ones like as gifts, and they're based on like characters from movies we like and stuff like that. Like there's a Minion from Despicable Me. There's the anger emotion from Inside Out.
That's
and
a good one.
And then there's the one, and then there's the Donald Duck looking one. That's Dolan did that internet meme from a couple of years ago.
How do you decide which one to use?
Or do you bring them all with you and just kind of like change it depending on how you're feeling?
Okay, yeah. So here's what happened. So I brought the five of them out to Vegas, and it was just, you know, I would just pick whichever random one for a tournament. And then I was thinking, I'm like, all right, how am I going to do this with the main event? Like, do I use this one on day one, this one on day two? And I'm like, and then all of a sudden I had a stroke of genius. And I was like, wait a minute, there's five ducks. We play five levels a day. I'll just use a different one for every level.
That's awesome.
And sure enough, and I'm sure that made me look like a huge fish too, because people would notice. They'd be like, that's not the same duck from before. And I was like, very perceptive, sir.
So I remember you talking about, you know, saying something to us in the hallway, like, everybody thinks I'm a huge fish because I have all these duck card protectors. So I took it as like an actual strategy, like they're gonna think I'm a fish, that's why I'm gonna use the card protector.
It's not, I mean,
without playing a hand, you're gonna fool me. Like, I'm gonna pay you off the very first hand we paid with like second pair or something. Like, I'm gonna think you're a fish, and then eventually I'll figure it out. But
right.
I think that's not your intended strat, but it's like an interesting one. I actually like it.
I mean, I think you should. Yeah, you should, if you could do that, you should. I kind of hate wearing my TPE stuff at the table because I can get away with more of like the recreational. I'm a recreational older player, but I can get away with like, hey, this is some accountant that came to play for his, you know, his poker vacation, and instead of like, hey, yeah, I'm, you know, associated with the site. Not that you really need to fear me, but but still, like, I, you know, I'm giving away some information by wearing TB, and I'm not necessarily playing to my image. So if you, I think that card protector does say something about you, and it does divert some of the reads, you know.
I found what was happening a lot too, because, you know, I would use it like in cash games and stuff, and people wouldn't remember me, but they would remember the duck, and like even dealers would be like, oh, I remember that duck, and then like it just makes me more memorable.
Yes, exactly.
Sort of like building an image for myself.
I have a question. Like, so when you ran that bluff into a set, did you smash one of these things? Like, I feel like it would be a good target to smash.
No, there have been times where I've wanted to just like punt one across the room, but I never.
I could totally see myself triple barreling into the nuts and like hucking it across the rail and getting like a 2-round ban or something.
Yeah, right. Or like, you know, you just lose like three flips, and then you know, the guy sucks out on your kings, and you're just like,
you start stepping on it.
People all the time, they ask me like, is this lucky? Is this unlucky? And I'm like, it's a piece of plastic. Like, I'm like, yeah. Sometimes I win, sometimes I lose with it. Then that doesn't do anything.
So like after day three, you didn't like stick with that one that you won all those chips with on that level, like when you went from 18K or whatever to 300, I would have been tempted to stick with that one. I don't believe in luck, but like, I don't know if I would want to switch.
No, you know why? That's the same one that got me from 110 down to 40.
The one that should have been smashed. Oh, see, yeah,
the one that should have been smashed. The one that should have been smashed was there when I had 16 bigs.
So you you got a good rotation. I get
it's
it.
It's a high variance duck, man.
Duck is now like on some mantle, probably.
Something really interesting happened on day four when people noticed, because you know, it started with the anger one. You know, he's got like a fire for a head, and I'd be like, yeah, you know, we got to heat up, pick up some hands. And then I took out the white one, and people were like, what is this, like the stealth duck? And I so they were like expecting me, it was like almost like they were expecting me to play different. So like I did get sneaky with a check raise bluff and got it through, and they were just like, see, that's the sneaky duck, you know, like, if they're gonna give me credit for stuff like that, then, like,
and you're just
not?
Like, no, I'm just playing poker actually. It's like, nothing to do with duck.
Yeah, and like actually I just flopped a gut shot, but like I figured you were gonna think I was gonna do this, so
nice.
Meta game. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's the aggro duck, huh? Like...
too good. So money bubble breaks on day four. Is that correct?
It was day three.
Day three.
I have a question, actually. Sorry to cut you off, Derek.
No problem.
Chris, how did you approach the money bubble? Because I know you've been playing for a while. I would expect that you would be trying to pick up a lot of chips during this level, especially in the main. I haven't been lucky enough to get there, but like I feel like this would be like, depending on, I guess, who was still at your table, like probably a good time to like ramp up the aggression and like, you know, start winning some pots.
Yes, but the problem was I had Marc-Andre with a million chips, and he was the chip leader of the whole tournament at the time on my direct right, and he was just relentless. And I actually did try to take a stand with him early, and it didn't work out. Actually, I wonder if I have the hand somewhere close by. I vaguely remember what happened, that like he opens the cutoff, and I 3-bet with ace-10 on the button. And he flats.
This is like 20-ish away from the money. Like we're on, like close to the money.
Yeah, we're definitely close to the money, and we're deep. Like I had like maybe 400K or something. Like,
and the nation may not know, the bubble lasted how long? Like hours.
Oh, the bubble was one hand. For some reason, we came back from a break. They paid 10-10. We had like 10-12, and we were just like, they didn't go hand for hand yet. They did hand for hand, one hand.
Wow!
And we were in. Like, and wow. it was weird because there was just a pure bubble.
That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, actually, so I actually have a hand history. Here.
Perfect.
Because they did it on the they actually covered this hand. So I 3-bet him from the button. He calls, and the flop is 10-8-3 rainbow.
And you said we have ace 10, right?
We have ace 10, yeah. I don't remember the sizings pre-flop.
But you guys are really deep.
Yeah, we're deep. So like he has like over a million, and I have probably 300-400K at like 15,000-3,000 or 2,000-4,000.
Okay.
So I bet 22,000. He calls, and then the turn is the six of spades, putting a second spade on board. He checks.
Do we have the ace of spades?
We do not have the ace of spades.
Okay.
So he checks, and I bet 55,000. This was kind of like a debatable point whether I should be barreling the turn or not. But I think there's going to be a lot of like 8-9, 7-8 type stuff that's going to like pick up equity. So like I could still get value from worse hands. Mm-hmm. But I don't think like a check back is bad either, but then I think he can also put me in a lot of like bad spots on the river. So I thought just going for the two streets on the flop and turn was the best.
Yeah, it seems like you're more likely to get two betting the turn because backdoor spades as well, and all those straight draws and pairs of pickup gutters.
My plan was the check like almost any river unless it was like an ace or another 10 or something, unless I like improved.
I like that.
So yeah, he calls, and then the river is the nine of spades. So the final board is 10-9-8-6-3 spades. 10-9-8-6-3. So Marc-Andre tanks for about a minute, and he leads into me for 150K. and that would have left me with like 100K. So I had 25 bigs. I actually thought about it because I was thinking like his, and I know that his range has like so many stronger hands, but like he also knows that. So he knows he could just be like putting the screws to me here that is like trying to make me fold a really strong hand.
Yeah.
And so I eventually did fold because it was just hard to like find hands that he'd be bluffing with. That was ultimately like Queen Jack got there. There's a lot of like hands that like I just, you know, like a lot of his bluffs like turn into better hands on that river. Yeah. Like he makes a lot of two pairs and stuff that he can value bet because I think he's going to be putting me on a lot of over pairs.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Your range looks like aces, kings.
Whatever. Right, exactly. Kings. So he didn't even think I had.
Not even jacks.
Yeah, he didn't even think I had the hand. So he actually shows the ace of spades, and then he showed the ten of clubs. So we actually had the same hand. He bluffed me off a chop.
Oh wow!
But yeah. but at the same time, like he asked me, he's like, "Would you?" He's like, "Would you have queens, kings?" Like, you know, he really thought that he was he really thought he was bluffing the river. Right. Like he had no idea that like I was gonna have anything near what I had.
Interesting. Pretty sick bet by him.
Yeah.
Well, he's got the ace of spade blocker, which is so huge there, and I think it's a really good spot for him to turn his hand into a bluff.
That's exactly it. Like, it's not even like really about his hand. I mean, his hand to him is just the ace of spades, and like my range just smashes yours right now. So I'm gonna like throw a huge bet out there, which, you know, really good play by Marc-Andre.
So he beat you out of all your chips, basically.
A decent amount of them, yeah. So like, yeah. So after that pot, I was back down to 300K, and I was just like, kind of worried about getting to the money. So like, I didn't want to get into too many big pots after that. Mm-hmm. And I kept it going, and somehow I got some back because I'm looking here, and I had 467, which was 77 big blinds, four off the money.
Wow.
So I somehow got it back.
Oh, it's such a tough spot on the bubble, and you have like the chip leader of the freaking tournament
right.
on your table, probably opening 100%. Like,
yeah, he was opening a lot.
I mean, there's just not much you can do. Yeah. And that's unfortunate too, because obviously I bet you everyone was on not scared money, but I imagine it was probably tighter than any tournament you've ever played on the bubble.
It was tight at first, but then actually a lot of people started playing back at him. Like they weren't letting him just run the table over. I mean, they were a little bit, and really you should, because, you know, 15,000 is not insignificant money. Sure. But people weren't just letting him like open every pot. I mean, we would joke around with him because like it would fold around to the button and be like, I wonder what he's gonna do.
I suppose there probably comes a point too where people could see how fast people are dropping, and they see how deep they are, and they go, "Well, I don't have to be totally scared. Like, I don't actually want to get all my chips in here, but I can still play tons of pots and be completely safe."
Right. Like, even in my place, like I could have tried to mess with him again, and like, you know, like I have 77 bigs. Like, I don't have to commit all of them to play a pot with him, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's not that many situations.
You could 5-bet fold off 77, like pretty comfortably too. I'm not saying you should, but yeah. Or no, 4.
That's not one I have in my arsenal yet.
You don't 5-bet king 5-0?
Oh.
They call that the Alioto.
That was a needle.
Just a little one. Just a little one. So let's. How cool was it making the money?
Oh, it was awesome. So I'm sure this might get pointed out in the ESPN broadcasts. I'm sure it will. But like, my largest cash before this was for like $8,500. So this. I mean, granted that like me cashing for 15K isn't actually me cashing for 15K, but
right.
I mean, it was still me cashing for a significant amount of money, and given the way my summer was going, like I was definitely hyped. And I still had like I had 70 something bigs.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, we're not stopping at 15K.
Right, exactly.
So it was
a nice feeling being in the money.
So like, where do you estimate you were at that time in terms of the leaderboard? Like, is that like average? Is that
Let's see. So if there were 6,700 people,
I think it's got to be well above average.
I was probably right around. So average was probably between 300 and 350.
Yeah.
And what did you have? And I had over four. I had like 450. So I was a little over average.
Yeah. If I recall correctly, it feels like it's not. Mark, I think there's still probably like 50, 60 big blinds on average.
That's crazy to be in the money with 60 bigs. I wouldn't know though.
And I ended up bagging. I ended up bagging 800K that night, which was pretty close to the top. Like it was, maybe like definitely like in the top 100.
How did you get to that? Was there just was there a big hand, or was it steady accumulation?
There was a couple of big hands, and then I ended up like knocking somebody out. Where I think I'd like three bet the guy twice, and like the second time I had kings, and he like ripped ace 10 into me or something like that. Or no, I remember what happened was he opened. Actually, this is a pretty big fade. He opened, and I flatted with ace queen. He opened like early position. He was an aggressive guy. I flatted ace queen suited, tried to like induce a squeeze behind me. Mm-hmm. And then a guy flats off of like 13 bigs instead of shoving.
Yeah.
And then the flop comes like ace rag two clubs, and the guy gets it in, and he's got ace 10 of clubs, and I end up making a pretty big hold there.
Nice.
Wow, that is a sick fad.
Yes.
Yeah.
How do you do that? You don't use that on TV.
Yeah, can you make a video about that, please?
Probably not, because I don't think I could ever do it again. Like, it's pretty funny because like I'm like notorious for like running really bad. So it was just like, it's like, all right, if I'm going to run good one time, like this is the tournament to run good in. It's
that's awesome. How it goes.
That's a pretty good choice. Yeah. So as the tournament progresses, so now obviously people probably start dropping pretty fast because. Bubble is broken. I mean, at what point did you start to go, wow, these pay jumps are really significant and this is a lot of fun? Because I remember sweating you and watching the pay jumps and going, oh shit, that's like 50K. Oh, now it's 60K.
Yeah, so when you get to a hunt, so the way it worked was like it would go like every couple of hundred, and then once you got to like around 700, it was like every 63 players or something like that. All the way down to 100. And then once you get to 100, it was every 9 was a pay jump. And like that's when it really started getting excited, when it was like, all right, every time a table breaks, I'm making like, and at that point they were actually like thousands of dollars. It wasn't like, at first it was like, ooh, we're making another 700 bucks. Cool. Yeah.
Right.
and that was on day 5.
And did you, upcoming new TP Pro Dylan, I think he finished 79th. Did you play with Dylan on any of these days, or were you always at a different table?
No, I didn't play. I didn't play with him at all.
Okay. So that was day 5 you ended with 800K, you said?
Day three, I ended with 800K.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. So you did day 3 with 800K. So then I'm assuming at this point now, you bag getting pretty excited. You're in the, you're in the top 100. Mm-hmm. There's how many left at that point? Like 600 or?
I think like 800 left.
800. Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, what's the mindset going home, getting up in the morning? I'm assuming you're pretty pumped.
Oh yeah, I was. I mean, the days were so long, so like they extended day 2 and day 3 like to be a little longer. So I was just so tired. It was just get to bed, try to get a good like 6 hours of sleep or so, and then get up back.
That was the biggest question I had for you. I didn't really, even when I asked you at the end, I was like, hey, like I need to know, like I want to go deep in this thing at some point. Like, how fucking tired were you? And you were like pretty tired, but they did give you an extra hour in 2 days, correct?
Yeah. So what happened was on day 2, they added an extra hour. So we played 5.5 levels instead of 5. And then there was a big uproar because 2C was then going to end at 1 o'clock in the morning instead of midnight. And then we had to be back for 11. So that's a 10-hour turnaround. That was really short. And then while day 2A, 2B had the day of rest. So they ended up pushing the start time back to noon so that we can have a normal 11-hour turnaround.
That's good.
And then they ended up just pushing the schedule back an hour later for like the rest of the tournament, which I think was a good decision because that would have been really rough on day 3. And then day 3, arguably one of the most important days because that's where the money bubble is.
And what a lot of members may not realize is, like, you're saying 11 hours. Like, it's not like you can go home and just go to sleep. Like, your brain will not shut off for, like, 4 or 5 hours. So you'll probably only end up getting, like, 6 to 7 hours of sleep anyway by the time you finally shut down.
Yeah, yeah. I was probably getting, like, about 6 hours of sleep on average, which was okay for me. Yeah, I remember, like, even, like, people wanted to, like, talk after. And I'm like, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I need to get to sleep.
Yeah, it was one of the things that I had mentioned on one of the TPE Live episodes. Like, and, you know, this is not a brag because day 3 seems pretty minimal now. But even just making day 3, I was exhausted. And yeah. I mean, I found, like, and this wasn't in the main, this was in a different tournament, but, like, I said on that podcast, like, I have so much respect for guys who play 6-7 days in the main event, because, like, being able to stay focused and energized and everything for that long is pretty much a miracle.
Yeah, I think one of another thing that I heard from Andrew recently that was very important was talking about playing at the end of the night. And how, yeah, after playing poker for 10, you know, 9, 10, 11 hours, like, you're not going to be as sharp. Like, almost everybody is not going to be making, you know, as good decisions in that 11th hour as they are when they first sit down. So I think a good thing to get into is to maybe, you know, snip off the bottom parts of your ranges to avoid the most marginal spots to, like, give yourself easier decisions. Like, I definitely made boneheaded mistakes in the later levels. I think I had a steady trend of losing chips the last level of the night, with the exception of day 3, because I just happened to pick up some big hands. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good advice.
Yeah.
You mentioned that to me too. And Vanessa Selps, actually, on a podcast with Jared Tendler a while back, mentioned she would shut down in the earlier levels to save up her energy for the end of the night when everyone was withering. And she would pick it up because she would, like, basically check out, she called it, mentally check out, and just really not, like, pay attention to every hand going on at the table, like, levels 1 through 4 or whatever, and then she would really pick it up. And it totally makes sense. Like, that's genius.
Right, yeah, that's a pretty interesting strategy.
Hmm. I'll do that next year, then. What day there was a day where you came in as what, second in chips or chip leader?
So day 4 was when I really started to almost become known, because I started with 800. I started at a table with Melanie Wisner. Remember people lining up at the table to take pictures with her, or, like, take pictures of her, not with her. And that was actually a really good table, despite having Melanie at it, because we both had a lot of chips, and she was the only person who had me covered. And actually, one of the November Niners was on my direct left, the Key Win, I think was his name. He was right next to me, and he was short, and, like, let's just say he got pretty fortunate to still be there. Like I wasn't the most impressed with him. So, like,
yeah, I think he's just an amateur. Like, the way they described him and stuff, and, like, you know, biggest cash wasn't crazy or anything like that.
Yeah. So that table was so soft. Like, people were just doing, like, it was amazing just seeing 800 people left in the main event, and, like, a guy would open. I think we started 4K, 8K, and, like, a guy would open to, like, 18, and then the guy in the big blind just, like, snap sticks out, like, 80K with 100 back, and then folds to a shove. Like, I was just like, wait, what? No. And then he was the first punt of the day that, like, I had won a few small pots, and, like, you know, generally being, like, a little more aggressive at this table, having the big stack, and then I picked up either aces or kings or something on the – yeah, I think it was aces. Pick up aces on the button. That's usually the way to go, is just pick up aces in a spot where you just never have anything.
Yep.
And people go nuts and, like,
yeah,
this guy 3-bet from the big blind with king 10, and I 4-bet him. He flats and then just leads out all in with king 10 of clubs on queen 8-3 spade.
Like, whoa. Like, just, thank,
like,
you.
Like, yeah, just like 30 bigs, like, no problem.
Wow.
Unfortunately, that table broke. Then I get moved to a table with Greg Raymer for like two hands. And then I got moved to a different table. But then at that point, like I won like another hand where like I'd opened like queens and got like the ace queen eight flop eight turn and got like three nice streets. I think I like overbet the river because the diamond draw missed or something, and I ended up getting paid off. And then next thing I know, I had had over 2 million, and I look at the leaderboards and I was third right behind Melanie Weiser and Maria Ho.
Wow.
And then I remember Jack Effel making an announcement. They were like, here are your day four chip leaders. And it's like, they announced Melanie Weiser and Maria Ho. And then I'm sitting there waiting. I'm like, all right, I'm in the top three. I got to get a mention here right now, right? And they were just like, no, just the two of them. Sorry, Chris, you don't have a vagina. You don't qualify.
You're out.
You're in the patriarchy. We can't support you.
Oh, yeah. I saw them tweeting like hashtag sorority sisters and stuff. And yeah, then, like, I don't even think they made the final 200 or something. Like, well, they both seemed to get knocked
out. I was ahead of Maria Ho about 15 minutes later. And it was, I remember like when I got to that break, it was Melanie Weiser was the only person ahead of me on the chip counts. And like that's when people were getting excited, when it was like, holy shit. Like, he has 185 bigs, like day four of the main event.
Yeah.
This is cool.
This is real. That's what I mean. Yeah.
And that's when I had to get on a plane and go home. It's a bummer.
Yeah.
I missed all the fun.
It was really fun sweating you on Twitter at this point, like starting to really get the excitement and just following. And then you and Dylan at the same time was just was awesome. It's nice to see people that you know making a deep run. It just really feels good for them. Yeah, especially people that are good.
For me, like, just meeting Chris this year and then like hearing how like his summer started off so rough and like came out here and like just first day loses a shit ton of buy-ins, and then like to see him deep, I'm like, man, like, good for him. Like, because that's tough to do. A lot of people that like lose at the beginning just can't catch up. Like, they end up playing bad because they're depressed that they lost all the money. And thankfully, it seemed like you didn't do that, and you were able to make an awesome run.
Oh, I mean, I was looking for flights home, and it was by like the third week. I'm like, how much would it cost to just go home now?
It happens every year. Somebody we know flies home. Like, it's unusual. And it's not something you can blame people for either. I mean,
it is
hard to play in that state.
But like, I was never really playing bad or anything. Like, it never got to me. I just wasn't running well, and then it eventually turned around. I you know, like, had a small cash in a monster stack for like 4,000 and was doing okay in some of the other events, and I was like, all right, this isn't like that bad.
Yeah.
So when do the cameras start to notice you?
It was towards the end of day four that there was a camera crew running around, and then they were finally like, oh, we found him. Because they were just like, who's this guy with 2 million in chips? Like, where is he? So the people were just running around the room, and they were like, oh, we found him.
Cool. Okay.
Because I was like, yeah, I'm number three. Like,
right.
You should be covering me.
I'm here.
And you weren't in at the featured table, right? You were just – you were at the outer tables.
I was just at a random table. This is the feature tables at that point. We're going to be Melanie and Maria. I think the main one was with Greg Raymer and Ryan Reese, because they were in and at the same table.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so how do you end day four?
So day four after dinner actually went completely downhill. Like, I didn't win a single hand in the one level, and then that's when Alex Keating showed up. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with him.
Yeah. Played with him before. I actually like him. I don't mind his antics, but a lot of people can't stand him.
Yeah, his antics were fun. I found them in good taste. I could see how he can get irritating to some people. And then eventually, like, as I'm losing every pot, I'm just like, all right, I don't really want to deal with you anymore. You're funny, except for when I'm like folding 50 hands, like, and losing every one I do play.
Yeah.
this guy literally talks every hand. Like, he'll show a card. He's hilarious. But yeah, I could see if I'm losing, it wouldn't be fun at all.
Right. I remember at one point he came, he's like, I'm going to ruin the main event for all of you. it was fun.
I mean, a lot of people tweeted that they hated him, including like David Tuckman. They're like, he was played. He's bad for the game. Honestly, he's bad for.
No, honestly, I was like, they need to get this guy on TV. Like, this guy is going to be great. Like, what are you guys doing? Get the cameras over here. This is funny. Like, come on. Right.
And they eventually put a camera right on him, correct? Like, literally on him.
Did he have a beard cam?
Yeah, he had a beard cam because he was sitting next to me on day six. And, like, that was the – day six was when I got frustrated with him. But, I mean, I guess we'll get there as we get there.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's go to the next. So day five. How many chips did you start with?
Day five, I started with – I want to say – oh, so 1.8 million,
okay.
which was still tons. Like, yeah. I was going to be – I think 1224 was the first level.
Okay, tons.
So it was a lot, even though it wasn't where I wanted to be. Right. Table draw ends up being pretty good. Like the only, like, good players – so there was one good player to my direct right. And then everyone else who was good, like, I had played with already, like, on day three or day four. So, like, I kind of knew what I was getting into.
Right.
So it was like, I had reads on people. And then it was kind of like a yo-yo level where, like, I'd lost a big pot and then immediately got all the chips back, like, pretty much from the same person.
Okay.
And so that guy ends up busting after doubling me up. Yeah, because I lost a flip. Actually, I lost a flip with one guy next to me with pocket jacks, and then I'm down to, like, 850. Then the very next hand, I get pocket jacks again, and I flop a set, and I get it in against middle pair and a flush draw, and I end up holding there back to 1.75. Yeah. And then – so some people bust, and then there's some new guys at the table, and then it just gets absurd because these two guys – they both fill in the one and the nine seat, and they play a pot with each other, and it's like a minute and a half pre-flop and 2 minutes on the flop, and then 30 seconds check, 30 seconds bet, 3 minutes call, and like the hand took 8 minutes. And on the river, like, I called the clock on the guy facing the bet, and I was just like, I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I can't stand when people, you know, and it was like this – you know, if they're going to set a precedent for taking long during hands, I'm going to set a precedent that this shit isn't going to fly. Like, I'm going to call the clock. I'm going to call the clock on them.
Yeah.
So, you know, floor comes over, does his thing. About 15 seconds later, a different floor comes over and grabs me to move me because they have to balance tables.
Yeah, you were probably ecstatic.
I was like, uh-oh. I was like, what did I do? Well, I was, and then I saw where they were putting me. So they dropped me off at this new table. And it was almost like they were licking their lips. I had Dan Coleman on my direct left with like 5 million.
Yeah.
Dan Highmiller was there. This UK guy and Matt Moss. Adam Friedman. Sorrell Mizzi. Like, it was superstar lineup. It was just insane. James Opes, too.
Jeez. Was this a feature table? Because it sounds like it should be on TV.
It wasn't, and then when we got to dinner break, they took the table and put it on the feature table because they were like, "Oh wow, this table's ridiculous. Let's put this on the feature table."
So what's that like? You're now going to go and be on the feature table and be on TV. What's going through your head?
I was really just worried about the people at my table because they were just so damn good. Like, it was such a tough table. And, like, I'm looking at the breaking order and we're like, we're never breaking. Like, it was just like, all right, I have Dan Coleman on my left for the rest of the day. Unless he decides to dust off 4 million, which I don't think he's going to do.
Yeah.
And then, arguably, like, the best player in the world. Like, one of the best players in the world. Like,
yeah, he was
whether there was a heater or not, the guy is just deep every time he plays.
He's really good. Like, he's good. I mean, I think the one thing that ended up working out was that since there were so many good players at the table, it wasn't like Dan Coleman could just run the show. Like, he still had Adam Friedman behind him, and then James Opes behind him, and then Sorrell Mizzi behind him. Like, there was so many good players that they couldn't just – like, the one guy couldn't just run the show because they had to worry about the other three.
That makes sense.
So, like, that was, like, the one thing that kind of kept it, you know, kept them all in check. And this was the one table that I think I kind of – this was one of the most feel-good moments for me in the tournament because, like, you know, I would talk to them from time to time. And, like – and Dan Coleman, regardless of his, like, you know, image with the media and everything, like, he's a really nice guy. You know, like, he seemed like – he just seemed like a nice, genuine person to me.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I remember, like, towards the end of the night, I'm talking with the guy Matt, and we're just because he was sitting right next to me, and you're just talking about stuff, and I told him about we were like talking about games on the East Coast, and you know that like I like to play mixed games and stuff, and talking about 2040 Stud, and they're like, you can make a living playing 2040 Stud. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I don't play for a living.
Yeah,
which I maybe shouldn't have divulged that, but
right.
And then he was just like, damn, could have fooled me.
Yeah.
So no, that's pretty cool.
That made me feel really good because I'm not a professional, you know, right. I'm like, you know, record, you know, I guess like a serious recreational player.
Right.
But like to the eyes, you know, in the eyes of these other guys, like I'm just another pro. Like they that's don't, great. You know, so like that made me feel really good.
Yeah. That has to feel good. Take that home with you. Like, getting that respect from some really, really great players.
Right. And like that was a critical moment for me in the tournament that I was starting to say to myself, if I can survive this table,
yeah,
like this table might very well be tougher than the November 9 table.
That's right. Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yeah, you like the November 9 would be a breeze after those guys.
Yeah. I mean, like, seriously. Unless all of those guys make the November 9.
Yeah, like, right.
You know, so
yeah,
I was thinking to myself, like, if I could survive this, like, I can. That's when I started thinking about, like, maybe I have a shot of, like, taking this all the way, you know, because at that point, like, I wasn't a chip leader anymore. Like, I was, you know, I like fell into the middle of the pack, and but, like, I was still doing well. You know, I still had lots of chips.
And was there any, I mean, like you said, you were more worried about the players at your table, but was there any sort of stress or apprehension about, you know, they can see my card, not the players, but you know, somebody's going to see my cards and I don't want to fuck up, or these lights are really hot, or like, was there any of that kind of feeling?
I mean, the lights were a little hot. It wasn't really like that bad. And like, you can get up and walk around and, but yeah, I mean, really like the lights and the cameras didn't really like affect me at all. It felt like it was pretty unreal. Like thinking about this, like how little like the gravity of this moment affected me at all. Like it was just really weird.
It's kind of awesome though.
Just so zoned in, like
right, exactly.
Like so focused on the goal that like, you know, like naked women could have been running around and you may not even notice them. Like you probably just so zoned in poker. And I mean, that's gotta be an amazing feeling.
Right.
But I mean, I imagine the lights and camera would get to a lot of people in general. Like they would try to run a bluff on TV or something like that.
Yeah, but I think like these guys, like these guys have all been there. Like these guys have like half of them have been at final tables this summer. Right. So like, you know, these guys have all been. Like I felt like I was like the only person who hasn't been on this stage already. Yeah, so I had to just pretend like I was. Yep. And I remember that was when the lady wanted me to wear the patch or 888, and I was like,
oh, that was the greatest tweet ever. That was the greatest tweet ever.
I remember that was like the most likes I've ever gotten on a tweet. Like up to that point. Yeah. My Twitter piece.
Yeah, say what you tweeted. Let everyone know. It's hilarious.
So I said, they want to pay me $500 to wear an 888 patch. Gonna have to tell them now. Nah, I want to rep Team TPE.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So great.
Yeah,
yeah,
I think I got that, chills.
I'm pretty sure I got chills too. Yeah,
because yeah. Yeah, here's what happened. They came by and they were like, "Oh, do you want to wear an 888 patch?" And I'm like, "No, it's okay." And then I'm walking away, like I'm heading over to the table with my chips, and she's like, "You don't want free money?" And I'm just like, "All right, you know, I'll see what this is about." So she gives me the patch, and then, you know, she's like, "How's like $500 sound?" I'm like, "Okay." Gives me the patch, and then gives me this contract. She's like, "Yeah, just sign this, you know, and then give it back to me." So I had one of my friends who lives in town. He came down. This is the first time he's ever really like watched something like this. You know, he was so excited. And we went to go get dinner together, ran over to the Gold Coast to eat. And I have this contract with me, and like I'm reading it, and I'm just looking. I'm like, you can't negotiate with anyone. Like if you make the November 9, you can't negotiate for 30 days.
Oh, my God.
Like, screw that. Like, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, then like the people I want are going to, you know, they're going to go find other people to sponsor. So I gave her back her patch, and then now I'm like, you don't get paid immediately. It's like 60 days. Like I thought it was just gonna hand me like a $500 chip and be like, here you go, you know, we'll renegotiate tomorrow. Like it was just a 1 day thing, and even just for two levels. But I was like, you know what? If I sign this and then I can't like wear a TPE patch on the final table because of it, I was like, no, screw that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Represent. I mean, that's
now we appreciate that too, man. That means a lot to us.
Yeah. Especially.
I was like, 88 didn't do shit for me. Like,
right. Yeah, we appreciate.
Like, yeah,
like, oh, shit! All we had to do was buy Chris a beer.
Well, 6 years in a row. So.
Tournament Poker Edge at least like took me out for drink, tried to wine and dine me, you know.
That's
so funny.
So then. If I recall, you doubled against Sorrell, right? Like that's when you started to really take off again.
Yeah, that was a little bit before then. So I ended up getting into a flip with Sorrell. It was a pretty one sided flip. I end up getting ace queen in against his. I think I opened the cutoff and he jams from like the small or the big for like 20 something bigs, and I'm just, you know, like against Sorrell, like, you know, someone of his caliber, like I need to just up the variance and just take that spot. Yeah. I mean, I think ace queen's a standard call against almost anybody there.
That table in general, yeah. Like, if you're going to be stuck there for a while, and you obviously can't know that, but yeah, I would take a flip too.
Yeah. And then we just get the ace queen flop. with an extra ace on the river for a good measure.
And what I love too is now at this point you get those chips, you go to dinner break, you're coming back to the final table. How does it feel to have your tweets go from a couple of likes to like 40 likes? Everything you tweet at this point.
Oh my God.
Everyone is watching you and following you at this point.
It was amazing, and then at the same time, you can't use your phone on the feature table. Yeah. So like, I would just put my phone in my pocket. And then it would be like 20 something Twitter notifications, like notifications on Facebook, like 13 texts. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, how do I catch up on all these? Like, I couldn't even read them after a while.
Yeah. And I was getting annoyed with you.
Yeah. And then I also had.
Because you weren't updating. And like, I was clicking refresh every second on Twitter. And then finally you say like hours later, you're like, sorry, couldn't use my phone. I'm like, God damn it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Cause they don't want you to use your phone on camera and everything. So like, you'd have to like get up and walk away from the table. At that point though, I had Carlos pretty heavily sweating me.
Yeah.
And,
Carlos,
you know,
really...
huge shout out to Carlos. Like he was amazing.
Yeah, he was giving us great updates the whole time that you were at the feature table. So
And also like even day five and day six, I would get into a spot and I would just like, you know, maybe run over to him and be like, you know, because he was watching it like on a screen. It was really cool. They had like screens on the side for like the media to follow, so they can get the action.
Yep.
And it's like popping open a table on PokerStars and just watching, like, you know, you can't see the cards, but you could see like the bets, the size of the pot and everything. And like, I remember even one time, like, cause it was in my field of view, like on day five where I was sitting. And I remember even just like looking past my opponent to see what the pot size was. Like, I'm like, all right, there's 1.28 million in here. Like, all right. So.
Carlos took the professional poker caddy job to another level, that's for sure.
Yeah, he took pictures of that screen several times and put it up. So that made it easier to follow you.
He was really into it and it was great.
Yeah. So now I remember you took a hit though near the, like, you had 3 million, I think, around 3 million going to the future table, and then what happened at the end of the day?
Yeah, so I had a big pot, and this was something that was kind of questionable. I actually posted this hand in the TPE forum, where a bunch of people commented on it. So I start to we're at 30,000, 60,000, and I think I have about 4.3 million.
Uh-huh.
And there's this Asian guy. He's a little older. You're like middle age, and he's decked out in this like poker income patches. Like he's got like five of them on, and like a hat, and just I guess he's the guy who made this or whatever or something. Because right. Wow. He's repping them hard.
Yeah.
And like I don't want to say like really aggressive, but like he's definitely played back at people sometimes in spots where like they don't have to have it. Like he's made like a couple of four bets. And like, nothing's really gone to showdown. Yeah, so like, he's like that older guy who's like not the super tight, always has it old guy, like kind of thing.
Right.
And yeah, so I mean, at this point, I'd really been kind of like tight, and people would always joke around that like the only hand I would play is my small blind, and I would like three bet the small, like almost every orb because that's where I was just picking up a lot of my hands. Oh, and then I had another fun comment that I'll get to after this hand. So he opens to, so we're at 30-60. He opens to 130 in middle position, and I have 9-8 of hearts in the cutoff. Mm-hmm. And I decide to 3-bet and make it 360. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people might be inclined to flat here, but I also had Dan Coleman on the button, so I didn't really want to give him incentive to come into the pot. So I was really like just playing most of my hands like pretty aggressively.
Okay. How deep are we effective? Sorry.
Like 4.3 million, so like 60 to 70 big blinds.
And did you full 3x or was that just a little under 3x?
Like 2.6, 2.7.
2.6, okay.
Yeah, that was like my standard in position. Like out of position, yeah. I would probably would have made it like over 400.
Yeah.
So it comes back to him and he 4-bets. He makes it like 725 or something. Like I don't remember the exact sizings now, but he makes it small. Where I'm getting like a really good price to just peel him in position. And this was something, this is probably like one of my leaks in tournament poker is that I look at these spots and I kind of like throw the ICM and like the tournament considerations out the window. And I look at this and I'm like, I have a suited connector in this spot getting this price. Like I'm getting the right pot odds against his range. So like, I'm just going to call. You know, even though I can't, like this is a slam dunk call in a cash game.
With I was going to say, in a cash game, you're just like insta flicking it in.
Right. But at the same time, like, you can't just, you know, you can't just reach in your pocket for more chips in this, in the main event. So,
yeah.
So, like, these are things you have to consider. But even so, like, I got some reassurance that this wasn't, like, a bad call.
Yeah. I think we should be calling here. Like, I get it. Like, there definitely is some ICM to consider, but you're super deep. It's not like you're just going to punt, you know? Like,
right, exactly.
Like, if you were shorter, like 40 bigs, like, I could see maybe just 3-bet folding, or maybe we just flat pre, but like, this deep, like, and that price, it seems like you're getting like 2.5 to 1.
I think better than that, right? Because it cost me like 365 more. And there's over a million between our raises alone, and then plus the antes and the blinds. Like there's
so you may be getting like 4 to 1.
Yeah, I'm getting like between 3 and 4 to 1, like probably like 3.5 to 1.
Oh,
with a suited connector in position deep. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Like if I'm only at 40 bigs, like I think this is a fold. So we flat, and it comes king queen six with 2 hearts.
Oh, Jesus.
And, yeah, so just enough to get in trouble.
Yeah.
So he continues. He bets 830, which pretty big sizing. Yeah. Like, you think this is what made me – like, I didn't think he was the best player at the table. Like, I think, you know, he was – like, he wasn't a fish, but, like, I don't think he was one of the stronger players, like, just by, like, the sizings he would use. Because it looks like he's just setting up for, like, a two-street play here. Maybe, right. Mm-hmm. Or like he's either setting up to get stacks in on the turn, or he just has no idea what he's doing. Mm-hmm. Because this is like it's pretty chunky bet, but it's like, but even so, it was like half pot. So I decided to call. Because I feel like, I mean, not only the pot odds, but like if the turn rolls a 3 of hearts, like I'm just getting all the money. I feel like he has it here.
Right.
Yeah. It feels to me that same way. Like I would suspect when we hit our flush, we're gonna make a lot of money.
Right.
The problem is the tournament consideration. So that's a huge chunk of your stack now that really could be put to effective use in the rest of this tournament. And I get it. And this is where like being on the feature table sucks because this is the kind of place where I'd like to fold and not tell anyone.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, because this.
But why?
This hand very much might make it to TV.
Wait, okay. One question: was the king a heart?
It's.
I know that's like a question. It's probably tough to remember that.
I think it was because I think the queen was the non heart.
Because I just think we always have the best flush draw here. Like, his 4-bet range is probably, like, ace-king, like, queens plus.
Right.
So, like, if the king's a heart, it takes away, you know, that takes away ace-king of hearts.
Right.
obviously, which gives us the best flush draw. So we just call one if we don't see our heart.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
We're like, never bluffing here, but like this is a chance to win the tournament because our implied odds with the guy always calling a river turn shove, river shove, whatever, when we make our hand.
That's exactly what was going through my head. Like if I double through this guy, I'm going to have over 9 million.
Yeah, I get it.
And that's going to make me like a top three stack probably.
Yeah. Like, and here's the thing. Sorry to cut you off. If we're not 100% sure our flush is going to be good, then we probably don't call.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I kind of think I'm not giving him H Jack of hearts here.
Right.
I mean, you could tell me differently. Maybe he does have that. I don't know. It just doesn't seem
like it. I was like, I think I'm like 95% sure the king wasn't a heart because like that might have even swayed me enough to like not want to call if like he could have a better flush draw.
Yeah, which I mean, ace queen of hearts, I doubt as well. Like, okay.
Yeah, like I think he might just flat ace queen of hearts.
I agree. Yeah,
and like the heart may have even been a six. Yep. I mean, the non-heart might have even been the six.
So king and queen covered? Ooh.
Yeah, like it was either the queen or the six that wasn't a heart. Anyway, so I call, and I have 2.8 million behind. So even if I fold this hand at this point, I still have just under 50 bigs.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't realize so, your stack like, was that
big. We were still really deep.
Yeah, okay.
So the turn is an offsuit seven, and he checks to me. And we're nearing about 3 million in the pot at this point.
So now we have the nut straight draw too, right?
So we have an up and down and the flush draw.
Oh wow!
And I guess the 10 doesn't make us the nuts, but like ace jack is pretty much not in his range.
Yeah.
So
this is a weird spot. This is a spot that like I run into all the time online. I never know if I should bet or check back.
Yeah, I think I was going with the read that like I felt that he was really strong by like by his flop sizing, the fact that he four bet me of all people, like I wasn't really getting out of line too much.
Right.
I felt like this was like more of a trap.
Yep.
But at the same time, this is a pretty sick spot to just rip it in.
Yeah, but like I'm with you. Like it looks like he could even be pot controlling like aces because like you have kings and queens. Although it's like
right. I mean, the real question is he four betting a hand like jacks or tens? Because like I can get him to fold those.
Yeah, and we don't think he is. We don't think he is.
Yeah, and like I don't. Maybe he could fold pocket aces here, but like, do I really want to make him try to fold aces? I don't know.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, I can see a river and then decide what to do.
let me ask you something. Is there anything? Had you seen him four bet before?
I have seen him four bet before, but like he's usually taking it down.
It didn't go to showdown. That's right. You said that. So we have no information here, like that. He could be like potentially light.
He could be. I mean, I'm not saying that he's never going to be light here, but like I think it's very probable that he's not light.
Yeah.
So then we should just take our free.
Yep.
I mean, we should just take the low variant route here and just check and bake our flush.
Right, and that's what I did. And the river just came an offsuit deuce of clubs, and I'm thinking, and I'm trying to figure out what my sizing is going to be when he checks to me on the river because I have to. If he checks to me again, then maybe he is light, and I can throw a bet out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But instead, he leads into me for like 1.2 or 1.3, which again is like a really weird spot because he's just leading for like almost half my stack, and like which really just was more in line with like he. He probably had it and was just trying to goad me into shoving the turn.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, it almost feels like kings.
Yeah.
King or queens, I guess. Yeah. But it's just weird that he would check, like, I guess if he has kings, I guess I could see that. But, like, queens, he probably bets because Chris has ace-king and stuff.
Yeah, because it's weird because, like, what does my range for flatting the four bet look like to him? Like, obviously, I don't think he's going to put me on 8-9 of hearts here.
Yeah, and you're not calling jacks or tens to that flop sizing, like over half pot.
Right, he gets the under pairs out on the flop. So like when I flat him on the flop, like he's got to think that I have ace king, kings or queens.
Wow.
Or like jack ten of hearts.
Yeah.
That's so sick.
So yeah.
Well, that... So we called with nine high and we were good.
Snap
That would have been me. Yeah.
That would have been amazing.
I really like your thought process in that hand. Like the fact that you were willing to bluff the river check too.
Yeah.
Like I think it's a must to bluff the river check too, because his hand almost is like, I don't want to say face up, but like it's not the nuts. Like we can get him to fold.
Yeah, it feels like he's only checking that turn to bet with strength on the river or just give up. If you bet, like that's the only time he's checking in there. I don't think he's checking there. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think he's checking there to make a strong call later on.
He's
played out.
I'm with you too.
Yeah,
I think he's probably trying to induce something from Chris.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I feel like when I check back the turn, if he checks the river, then like maybe he's just giving up with his his ace five suited or something that he
exactly.
You know, decided to four bet bluff with.
What was the sort of response in the forums? Like, did they lean particularly one way, like folding turn or anything, or folding to the?
Well, we gotta just fold the flop, the turn, I guess. Check two, like
that's why I qualified. I meant to say folding to the bet on the flop.
I don't want
to
see the river. I fold.
Oh no! I picked up too much equity. I definitely can't win now. well, I know that Andrew and Matt Hunt, they both agreed with how I played it, and a couple of members were debating, like the pre-flop play, mostly. Like, you know, do we even want to get into this spot?
Right.
I
feel like it's one of those things where, so part of the argument for not wanting to get into the spot is that we just didn't get there. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, well, we shouldn't have been in this spot anyway.
I mean, there's ICM implications to go into day six with like 9 million in chips too.
But the thing is, you described it perfectly pre-flop. Like, you didn't want to flat because of who was behind you. Like this right. hand plays so much better as a three bet because you uncap yourself. Like, you can now rep all the top if he just calls. Like, we're not trying to get into this massive pot where he four bets and we flat. It just works that way when he sizes it that way, you know?
Right, and yeah, like, and if this guy just flats the three bet, like, he probably just gets everything with this on this run out.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're going 1-2 and down your throat three.
Yeah, because this is this is a three barrel run out right here. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, and I like your thought, like just bring the fact that you thought about Coleman on your left, which makes it like a better three bet than flat to have him like squeeze you out and stuff.
Yeah, I love that thinking.
Yep.
I will make sure to put a link to this hand in the notes below the podcast. So for members who are listening, you can go ahead and check that out if you want to read like all the feedback and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a super interesting spot.
Cool. So unfortunately, though, it leaves you with a little bit of hit to your stack. So how do you end the day about?
I think I ended the day with less than I started with. I think I ended with, because then I probably lost a few small ones after that as well.
So do you are you excited about day six, or are you feeling stressed about losing the stack?
Yeah, so I had 1.88 million, which was 23.5 bigs going to day six.
Yeah.
And my table again was like super tough. Like, I didn't really know many of the people, but like I looked them all up, and like I had Valentin Fornicu, M Blaster. And he had all the chips, and like there were just a lot of other like good players that I don't remember. And I had Keating on my direct right this time.
Uh-huh. I mean, the final 100 was ridiculous.
Yeah. Stacked field, like, yeah.
It was disgusting.
I'm like, look at all these names and this fish right here.
I remember looking at that final 100 and going, this is going to be the toughest November 9 ever. Like, it just seemed like it was shaping up that way.
Yeah. But then so many people just... I mean, game theory, I guess. So many people just going absolutely apeshit with ace five in this tournament.
Dylan said the same thing. He couldn't believe how, like, the later the tournament went on, like, the more he saw just absolute punts.
Yeah, it was really weird. Like, James Opes got a lot of his chips just picking up, like, pocket tens against ace five in a five bet pot. Like the guy just went like three bet, five bet, ace five offsuit. Like it was just like button versus small blind or something. It was just, it was insane. And like, but it was always ace five. And like, I don't know exactly why that hand is like the punt hand. I don't know. Like,
yeah, it should be king five.
Like, he's not the first person I saw just go absolutely nuts with ace five. Like, it was just,
wow.
Yeah. And then I decided to replicate it on day seven, but we'll get to that.
It was your turn.
Yeah.
So how did you double? How did you get it in there? Because then you did start to climb the ladder again back on day six.
Yeah, so day six started out slow, and like this was the problem. This is where I was getting fed up with Keating and his antics. Is that like he would just take a long time. Mm. And like it would be like a raise and a three bet to him, and he would like tank for a minute before folding. And like, I don't know what he had, but like we only played 30 hands in the first level. And like, as a short stack, that's super frustrating to me.
Yeah, that's gotta drive me nuts.
And also, at first I couldn't figure out why. And then once Keating finally busted, and we were just seeing so many more hands, and we were like, oh, okay, that was why. It was because he was taking so long all the time.
Right, right.
Yeah, it adds up when you have a guy like that who, you know, maybe takes like a minute or a minute and a half to fold, and it's like not long enough to call the clock, but it's enough that when they do it 30 hands in a row, it eats up, you know, quarter of the level.
Right, exactly. And like, and I always play pretty quickly. Like, I mean, I'm used to playing online. You don't get a lot of time online, so like, it's not, you know, I mean, to me, like what you're not really going to make much better decisions after like 30 seconds anyway. Yeah. I mean, you know, if it's a big spot, if it's a big spot, like I can understand, but like, you know, like pre-flop, I mean, these people, like how many times have you made a pre-flop decision in your poker careers?
Right. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Like, you don't know what to do. Like you really don't know what to do here.
Yeah.
You're under the gun first to act. You've been in this spot a million times.
Yeah.
Exactly. And
especially when it's hand after hand after hand. Like
he shuffles his cards on top of each other, re-looks at them twice, then folds them. Man, like what
the...
Yeah, and like I imagine like as a short stack deep in the main event. I mean, this would drive me insane.
Yeah. God, very nice.
Because, like, he's kind of stealing money from you in a weird way. Mm-hmm. Or at least equity. Like, it's kind of rude. I mean, I don't know. I'm torn. Like, I see a lot of people give Jordan Christos a lot of shit. And supposedly, I guess he's cleaned it up. But I get it, like, sometimes. But, yeah, like, pre-flop is where I'm a little confused at why they take so long, but
a lot of these things are really just standard. And I mean, I think it's this way of thinking that really made it like not get to me because even at this point, you know, people are like, oh, you know, what's it like day six? And I'm just like, I'm in a poker tournament. I have 23 bigs. Like I have a range that I'm going to shove over the button here on the cutoff. Right. Like that's all I'm thinking about is just like how I'm going to play. You know, I'm just going to hope I pick up something good soon. You know, not that like this is the main event and like we're getting close to six figures soon and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, like I really wasn't thinking about all that stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. And a lot of people couldn't do that though. You got to understand, like that's amazing that you can like, okay, like I have 20 bigs, like let's look, I need to reship other than I need to outlast 10 more guys to make 10 more $1,000.
Yeah, I mean, the pay jumps were in the back of my mind, even though I still found myself getting it in like on pay jump bubbles most of the time. Like, yeah. So the big one that got me back in it, I had about 20 bigs or so, and the button opened and I defended the big with king seven suited. And then flop came out queen jack reg with two clubs, and I check shoved all in, and he had queen six, and I ended up spiking a club on the river.
Oh, bingo.
Which was, one of the few times. And like, this is actually the second time I'd taken this line. There's another one where I'd like defended, I think, king queen or something, and check shoved like queen 8-4 or something like that. And like I had the guy like ready to call me with like pocket sevens or an eight or something. Like it's like not a spot where like you would think to do that with like top pair, but I think there was like a flush draw out there too, and like, you know, like It was against Valentin, and he's into the tank a little bit, thinking like, did you just check jam a flush draw into me? You know, right. And I was like, that's exactly what I want you to think. So.
Yeah. Well, especially when he's got heaps, because I think didn't he have like
eight or something at this point? Yeah, he was the chip leader at that time. Yeah, he had tons of chips. So I ended up doubling up back there, and then when we got to the break, and I have 5 million, a little over 5 million. And like that was the one break where it like actually started to hit me. Like, like holy shit, where there's like 50 or there's like maybe 40, 50, 60 people left in this thing, like guaranteed like over $100,000. Like, and I just started getting like really emotional.
Yeah.
On the break, and I was just like, and I was a little worried that I gotta like get myself back together. Like, this is not good.
Yeah. Well, you did though, because you started climbing. Like that's when it was like that's when it got. I mean, it's been exciting on Twitter, a Twitter follower. It was exciting the whole time, but then when you started hitting 7 million, 8 million, and there was like 30 left. Like that's when this was like amazing to sweat you on Twitter.
Yeah. So then we started climbing. Yeah, it was literally like 2 or 3 minutes before the break ended. I was like, okay, I was starting to get my composure back. And it was like literally the second I sat back down at the table, like I was just like locked in again. Like it was just, you know, all right, like we're doing this.
And I noticed you didn't post any hands from that time. Was there anything specific that happened, or were you just taking pots down like without showdowns or?
There was one where like I had opened pocket tens and gotten 3-bet by, you know, like a capable young guy in late position. I flatted him and then called a C bet on like a, like maybe like a 9-deuce-deuce flop or something. And then it went check turn, check river. And like, that was one point. I mean, these pots are all so big that like it's 6120K. And I opened to like 260 and he 3-bets to like, you know, maybe like 800-900 or something.
Right.
And I call that, and then he C bets for 700.
Right,
like,
right.
That's 1.6 million right there. Like that's
right. So you're going from like 5 million to like 6.5, and then one more of those, now you see it at 8 million, and it's like
right,
wow.
Exactly.
Like,
and then the next thing I know, I got 8 million, and then
that's why when I play a tournament or these things are so long, and like three good hands in a row will completely change your tournament, the tournament for you. So that's why you just can't panic, and you got to stick in there. And back to ICM, like don't, you know, yes, you want to take the right spots, but like a rush you don't have to force the action often if you're riding comfortably. Like you'll find those that rush where it'll change the tournament.
Hopefully. Right. Yeah, and I think I was having a good – I think I had, like, a good feel for, like, when people – I don't know what it is, really. Like, just, like, when people were, like, going to have it and then when, you know, when it was questionable. Like, I made a couple, like, late – you know, like, I think twice to Valentin, like, I'd, like, raised and, like, just laid down nines when he 3-bet me just because, like, I knew he just wasn't messing with me here.
Right.
And
how does it start to – what's the buzz like now that you're getting down to like 3, 4, 5 tables? Like what's happening?
Oh yes. I mean, I was on a feature table all day for day six. So like, I didn't really like see it happening outside, but you know, knowing that we're getting down to like 30 players, like it was definitely exciting. And I was like, man, we just, you know, 20 more people and we did it. Like, let's just keep doing it. But at the same time, like I was realizing that other people had so many chips. Like I end up bagging like 6 million at the end of day six. And I'm like 20 out of 27. I'm towards the bottom of the chip counts. Like with 6 million, I'm just like, oh man, I didn't do enough.
Yeah, right.
You know, so and then looking at the names left, because at that point I decided to research everybody, because you know there's only if they don't start at my table, they're going to be there eventually.
right. Yeah, exactly. They're coming.
And you know, so we tried to come up with. I tried to come up before, even like before I went to sleep that night. We just had like a strategy of like, you know, because we knew right away who was going to be at the table, what everybody had, and I knew I was coming in like tied for the shortest stack at my table.
Right.
Like my table had, like I had Cliff right on my right. He was the overall chip leader with like 30 million. Valentine was at my table again. He had a ton of chips, and like there were like Matt Moss was there again. And there were just, you know, a lot of people. You know, people just had it was very deep.
Yeah.
Right. So, and also looking at the pay structure, there's no jump from 27 to 18. And then from 19 to 18.
What? Wait. Say that again.
There's no pay jump from 27 to 18.
Wow.
27 to 19, rather.
Okay.
Now from 19 to 8, so I was guaranteed 269. And then 19 to 18, there's like a 70K jump. And then from 16 to 15, there's a 90K jump.
Right.
And then from 13 to 12, there's a huge $220,000 jump.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah, so you really got it. You really, 27 to 19, you're really playing to build a stack there.
Exactly. So my strategy going in was like, I'm going to take a little more risk early on, because when you get down to like 14-handed, like there's whoever has the chips, like that. This is exactly what happened last year with Joe McKeon, is that there were these monstrous pay jumps on the final two tables, and Joe McKeon, and it didn't have to be Joe McKeon. It was just whoever had the chip lead was just going to abuse everyone.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, it's really a good way to.
So, look like, at it. I wanted to be in that position because you know that looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah,
yeah,
and profitable.
Yeah. So we looked at the people, and like I was probably the only amateur at the table. So like I'm assuming with 27 left in the main event, these guys are all going to be doing their homework too.
Right. So now this is now you're coming back to day seven is what we're talking about at this point.
Yeah,
right?
Day seven.
Yep. Right.
So. You know, I have seven or eight other pros at this table. And I played a grand total of six hands. Go through all of them. So it starts hand one with me raising tens under the gun plus two and taking down the blinds.
Uh-huh.
Right. The second hand under the gun one, I get rags. Then just fold. The third hand, I get nines under the gun. I raise, Valentine three bets me, and I give it up.
Okay.
The big blind, I pick up 7-6. Somebody opens, there's another call. I defend the big, and bad flop, I fold.
Yep.
Small blind, I get rags. And then the button, I pick up ace-deuce, and it folds around to me. Ace-deuce off. And I have just under 6 million, and we're at 100K, 200K. I raise to, I think, 430. And Jared Blesnick is next to me, and he had lost one of the other hands, and I had him barely covered.
Right.
And he was someone that my friend and I were talking, and he was and we were under the impression that like that he was going to be playing to win.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know that he's a pro, like he and like I said, like if he's going to be doing his homework, like he's going to know I'm an amateur.
Yep.
This is my fourth hand I'm putting money in, yep. out of six that we've played so far. So it almost seemed like the stars were aligned for me to get three bet light here.
Yep.
But now I wanted to be ahead of the game a step, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, even before I came here, like these guys are all, you know, these guys look me up. They're going to see my biggest cash is $8,500. And right now we're guaranteed 270,000. Like, what amateur is going to be crazy enough to like just rip it in totally light here?
Right.
You know.
Right.
And I decided like I'm going to be that guy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to like try to put him in a bad spot. And I said to myself, I'm like, all right, the first time somebody three bets me like in a steal position, and you know, provided I have like, you know, a hand good enough to do it with, like I think this was a, you know, good hand to do it with, a, you know, wheel card ace,
yep,
for, you know, blocker value and everything, like I'm just gonna rip it in his face. And then, you know,
Chris, I mean, in my opinion, this is like the definition of a spot, and I love it. I'm curious before even Mark, I'm curious what kind of feedback you got on it, because I think it's a great spot, and I love the play. Well, but I don't know what kind of feedback you're getting.
I honestly hope the feedback makes it to ESPN. So I raise, he three bets to like 1.3, and then I shove after about maybe 10 seconds, and I regret just not snap shoving, like to really kind of sell it.
Yeah.
But You know, he.
I think you sell it a bit more by tank.
I think
yeah,
so too.
I think I'm just gonna do it like I normally, you know, yep. Just play the hand normally. Yep. Right. You know, my whole routine, you know, everything just like normal. And he sits there and he's just sitting there and he's just like, I don't think I could fold this. Like, I can't fold this. And he's, you know, he looks at his hand. And he's just like, yeah, you know, it's too strong. I can't fold this. And then he puts the money in. He has two nines, which makes me think, like, you know, two sevens might be going right in the muck here.
Yeah.
If he chose to three bet those two.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the spot. I like it better with King Deuce suited or like King Deuce O, like just because that gives him more ace X three bet bluffs. Mm. Like, because you can use the blocker both ways, right?
Right. Okay.
But I also like, I also still like it anyway in general. Like, I mean, I know who he is. Never played with him, but like, I've watched Poker After Dark. I've seen him on Full Tilt playing the highest stakes cash games. I would bet my life that I would probably do the same thing in this exact spot, just knowing that he's aggressive, knowing he's probably trying to win the tournament. And, like, having the ace blocker is obviously huge because you block a shit ton of his three-bet calling range. Yep.
Right. And, yeah. And like, the fact that he doesn't snap me – the fact that he doesn't snap me with nines, like, makes me, you know, kind of – It kind of like solidifies a little bit that like, yeah, you know, this was the play because he doesn't think that I'm going to be light here. Like he's side calling off with nines because he's not expecting me to ever be light. But like, at the same time, like yeah. Me, you know, having it could also be ace king. So he has to call,
you know how many better aces you're getting him off here.
Exactly. Like he's probably like, I think folding ace jack goes ace right into the muck.
Yeah. Like, that's key. Like, so people, and this is the thing, when you do stuff like this, you're always going to get criticized. But remember, you're the person in this spot. Everyone else that wants to criticize you is at home jerking their dinghy on. You know, like,
right.
I mean, you're in this spot. You're the only one that knows what the right play was at the right time, especially a spot like this. Like, you said Jared had just lost a big pot. Like, okay, then he's probably going to be a bit lighter against the quote-unquote guy with an $8,500 cash. Like, I think you looked at the spot. I mean, I like the play. Yeah. I mean,
so when the cards go,
I told you
so when the cards go on their back, like he goes over to his rail and like somebody from over in that section was just screaming, terrible shove, like at the top of their lungs. And I'm like, I honestly hope ESPN doesn't edit that out. And like, they just put this dude on blast. Cause it was really just like distasteful. I don't know. Like,
absolutely. Yeah, especially, yeah.
He almost folded nines. Like, how could it be a bad play when a guy almost folds nines here, like, off 30 bits?
I mean, I don't think he was ever folding. Like, I don't think he was just – I mean, he didn't make it seem like he was going to fold, like, but, like, you know, he didn't love the situation.
Yeah, I don't think I would either.
The situation in his body, though, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I may just shove in his shoes, to be honest, with 30 bigs. I may just like take the low very round. Respect. I'm not giving you a chance to 4-bet shove King 10.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. Like, in poker, there's a lot of freaking douchebags. Like, you're going to have people that say that. When you're, like, in the biggest spot of your life, you're going to have some dolt in the crowd that, you know, probably doesn't even play poker say that. Like, it's a shame, but like, you know, it's no sweat. Like, you're the one there. Fuck him.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, I mean, and it didn't bother me that much because, like you said, like, I, you know, I'm the one looking at the spot, and I had the reason, like, I had the game plan going in. Like, I was just happier that I had the balls to go through with my plan.
Yeah.
Rather than like, you know, turn around and be like, all right, we're gonna rip it in his face, and then just like actually be there and be like, you know, maybe I should just wait.
Yeah. I don't know if this is true or not, or if you even saw it, but I remember when you tweeted about the person saying something from the rail, and somebody replied to the tweet and said it was Jared Blesnick.
It wasn't actually this. Actually, I think yesterday or the day before, somebody else finally replied to that and said like, no, it was me. It was like the worst shove ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you can go back to that thread and like see that. And I was just like, well, yeah, berating amateurs is what's ruining poker. Like, thank you. You know, like,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. At least we know who the douchebag is
now.
Yep.
But
well, seriously, bro, like, congratulations. Yeah. Amazing run. Like, could not have happened to a nicer dude. Like,
yeah, everyone's happy for you.
Yeah, really happy for you. And yeah, like Diego said, like, I think we were all kids, like, refreshing our Twitters. Yes. Like, it was tough. Fucking exciting, man. So thank you. Especially not being able to play it, like, it made it worth, like, it was amazing, the fucking rail.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I was really, it was really just not going to happen for me because, so what ends up happening is I lose the pot and they say he had me covered. And, like, you know, they announced me in 27th place and I go to leave. And then they're like, wait a second, because according to the screens, I had him covered. Yeah. So I end up with 120,000 chips left.
Oh, God.
After doubling him up. So, like, all right, I'm back, you know? Yeah. Like this could be the comeback of a century.
Oh, my God.
So I Annie 30 of my 120,000 chips. I look down at my cards. I'm in the cutoff now. My first card's an ace. I was like, oh, this is too good.
Yeah.
I get ace, king of diamonds in the cutoff.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, sick.
So, and I'm looking at just like, this is just too, this is ridiculous. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, maybe I should have, you know, if I would have waited and picked this up the next hand. But anyway, what ends up happening is the big blind has fours and the flop comes ace, deuce, four. Like, I was just, if I didn't give my chips to Blesnick, I was just giving them to this guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, it was just, you know, and there's no way I'm getting off of that on 25 bigs.
No.
Right. So, like, you're opening, he's flat.
Yeah, it just wasn't meant to be. So. Yeah. I mean,
obviously nothing to be disappointed about. Well,
yeah,
I'm sure you were disappointed, but you know what I mean?
A little bit, but yeah, at the same time, like, this is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yep.
So now, what is this? Does this mean anything really for your, like, quote unquote poker career going forward? Like, are you going to start playing a little bit bigger stuff? Are you going to play more, or is it just sort of back to business as usual?
Yes. I mean, this is really nice because, you know, because now I can more comfortably play 2-5 and even, like, play 5-10 a bit more. Funny, because, like, since I busted the main so quick and I pushed my flight back, now I'm in Vegas an extra day with nothing to do. So, like, and I plan on playing poker all day for day 7. Yeah. I ran over, I busted, had the money wired to my bank, and ran over and played 5-10 at the Bellagio for a little while. And people are, like, refreshing their things. And
that was the funny thing ever. That was the funniest thing I ever read. I was like, something is wrong with you.
Yeah.
Like, you need help.
I mean, because everybody had left town and, you know, nobody knew was there. And I had to wait for my friend who I was crashing with that night to get off of work. And, like, I ended up making another 2,000 just being stuck in Vegas for another day. So, like, it was
so great. That's a lot of heart, man, to go play 2-5 at the Bellagio. Really,
yeah. I was like, all right, I got money now. Let's play 5-10. Let's go.
If I ever have that score, you know where to find me. It's a place called the Strip Club.
Yeah,
for like a week and a half.
find him passed out at the Spearman Rhino.
I'd be like, Mark, give me 249,000 of that 250,000, and then you can go to the strip club.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, very cool. Yeah, like I said, great job and an amazing sweat. Thanks for obviously being, like, such an incredibly dedicated member for all these years. We really appreciate it.
Oh, no, yeah. Thank you, guys. I mean, it was really Tournament Poker Edge and watching, you know, Casey and Mike Leah, like, even back then when he was making videos, you know, and then, you know, for helping introduce me to Andrew and his stuff. And, like, you know, I ended up working with him. He coaches me. I mean, he was coaching me more for cash, but, like, you know, his content really helped me think in a very different way. And that really like put me at the next level, I think, in terms of my game.
That's awesome.
Well, I can't wait to watch it on TV. It's gonna be amazing.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun.
Why don't you give out your Twitter so all the TP members can follow you if they already aren't?
Oh yeah, it's at Too Busy Winning.
Which is appropriate.
Yeah. Nowadays at least.
Yeah, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well, so people can just click that and give them the follow. It'll be interesting to see, to kind of follow the exploits for the next year now that you got the, like you said, a little bit padded bankroll and stuff.
And I assume you'll be at the next Borgata, the fall, whatever they do in the fall.
Yeah, so I played the summer main event, and yep. I'm going to play. So I can't play Parks because I'm back to teaching. I'm teaching a course in the summer for these next couple weeks. And actually, really funny, I walk into the office on Monday for the first day, and one of the admins is like, congrats in Vegas. Like, why'd you come here to teach the summer? And I'm just like, how the hell does this guy know that I... Yeah. And, I was like, oh, wow. Like, news travels quick, huh?
Yeah. It must, yeah.
And
I'm sure they were already trying to line up another teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the guy called me like a couple days before, and he's like, you still good to teach in August? I'm like, yeah. You know, yeah. Do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good, well. So I'll be there in September planning to play. I think I'm going to go for like the last week and play the horse, the six max, and the main.
Nice.
And then I'll probably be down maybe like, you know, a day or two around to like play 5-10 because usually the 5-10 games are really good during the September Open.
Perfect. Nice. Awesome. Well, congratulations again.
Well,
man.
Very cool.
Yep.
Yeah, and thanks for taking some time out to chat with us. It was fun to sort of get to relive it through your eyes.
Yeah, no problem. It was a lot of fun.
Cool, cool. All right. Well, Mark, thank you too, by the way.
You know, I'm here.
how was your main event?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's cover Mark's main event. We have a minute left. There we go. We have a minute.
I was sick. I didn't play. I know. That's enough. I know you're.
Yes.
I didn't punt this year. That's the good
That's
news.
Good. Yes. Yeah. Good your job. Best showing yet.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, shit. I can't win. See, this is what I take all the time, Chris.
Too funny. Yeah, all right, we're gonna wrap it up here. But after the commercial, Diego and I will come back and wrap things up officially. Yep. But thanks, Mark. Thanks, Chris. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
Awesome. Right.
Thanks,
Chris.
You guys. Starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch, and it's bringing me out the dark. Finally, I can see you crystal clear. Go ahead and sell me out, and I'll lay your ship bare. See how I leave with every piece of you. Don't underestimate the things that I will do. Chance bringing me out the dark. The stories told me you will remind me of right to keep me thinking that we almost had it all. The stories told me you will they leave me breathless. Can't help feeling like we could have had it all. Open in the day, you have my heart inside of your hands. Yes, you play.
Welcome back to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. Big thanks to Mark Aliotto for stopping in. And, of course, extra special thanks to Chris Kusha for coming in and giving us a behind-the-scenes look at his run in the World Series of Poker main event. That might be one of my favorite episodes we've ever done.
Yeah, that's fun, just following him through that journey. Hearing about the highs, the lows, the progression, his stack, and the excitement was awesome. And some good hands that we discussed there, too.
Yeah, he did such a good job of, remembering things, details about hands and stuff, but also of just sort of like shining sort of a light on what the experience is like not just, you know, the hands and stuff, but talking about what it feels like and what you're kind of thinking on breaks and thinking about strategies coming into the next days and stuff like that. I haven't listened back to too many of our podcasts recently, but I might actually go back and listen to that one because it was pretty damn cool.
Yeah, and when do they release the schedule for the WSOP? Because I can't wait to go back. That makes me just want to go play again.
I know. I'm ready. Yeah. It's the same story every year. Like by the time you leave the Rio, you're like so ready to leave. But it always only takes about 2 weeks before you start going. Okay.
Yep,
I'm ready to go back. When's the World Series?
Yeah.
In fact, the World Series circuit event's going on in Cherokee this week, this coming week, and I was pretty close to going, and I was just like, you know,
I probably could take a day or two off and spend it with my family for once. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of back on the grind though, and playing though, are you twitching again? You're playing. How's that going so far?
Yeah, I've kind of gotten back to my my full time grind, I guess. I was actually talking about this on my Twitch stream like a night or two ago. I'm currently on not my biggest downswing, but my longest downswing in terms of time, which now part of that is because I didn't really play for 2.5 months
right.
or, you know, 2 months while I was in Vegas. So that contributes to it. But yeah, so it's a little bit frustrating, but we're back on the horse, and I actually shipped a tournament like 3 nights ago.
Oh, nice.
Not a huge one, but like the 3K guaranteed emerge.
Yeah, but that's good. That gives you your confidence back, and it gets you, you know.
Yeah,
like the right mindset again. Yeah,
I needed it.
You know, the only way to get out of the downswing is just play your way out of it.
Yeah, you just got to grind. So that's what I'm planning to do. So yeah, looking forward to that. How about you? I know obviously you did that Borgata run.
Yeah. I mean, I did a bunch of live over the summer. I played a lot online in the run up to the WSOP. You know, just to get, you know, I always do that and make sure I'm playing sharp, and you know,
like you were doing really well too.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was up and down, right? Like, yeah. You know, I'm not posting that much about, you know, the tournaments I busted out.
True.
No, it was fine. It was probably break even. Maybe, yeah. I mean, I took money out, so I don't know. Maybe up a little bit. You know, certainly nothing that is nothing memorable, because I obviously clearly can't remember it, which is fine for me.
So we're not going to do an entire podcast episode on any of your deep runs.
Yeah, no. So yeah, so you know, it was fine. A lot of live. I've getting back from all the live stuff. Taking a little bit of a break and back to the daily routine. But you know, get the itch again, and I'm sure I'll be playing, you know, online. I think there's a couple of good things coming up on Black Chip Poker in the next couple of weeks anyway, so I'll probably, you know, probably take a stab at those.
Yeah, I actually, for the first time in a long time, we ended up at the same table.
That's right. That was fun. Yeah, and I think you busted before me, so
I'm clearly the better player. How it goes.
Yeah. Cool. Well, good stuff.
Yeah. So let's, we obviously talked about, you know, what a great representative Chris was for TPE. So let's talk a little bit about TPE. What we got going on?
Yeah, the major stuff is, I think the biggest thing is that there's the new pro starting tomorrow. Starting Friday. Dylan Tomasi, who is the Dylan, I forget his.
The Dylan 186?
186, something like that. Yeah, and he finished 79th in the main event. And he's been a friend of TPE for a long, long time. He's been a pro for like 9 years. And he's just one of those guys that I also love talking poker with. So I'm excited to see his series. And his first series is a hand history review with Mark. And eavesdropping on Mark and Dylan talking poker is one of the nicest things about going out to the house. So
he's a great guy. I'm excited to have him on board.
Great guy.
Yep.
Sure. So good representative of TPE.
Who knows? We might even be able to get him on a podcast.
Yeah, we should definitely do that. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, he finished, you know, one day short of Chris, so there's a lot to talk about there too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the major stuff. And other than that, just grinding away.
Very, very cool. Well, it was fun. I'm glad we're back on the podcast grind here. Thanks again to Mark and Chris. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And thanks to all you guys out there for supporting TPE and TPE Nation.
Yeah. Thanks for sticking around to the end of this podcast again. I saw a tweet that made me laugh. The you know, not to get political, but the hack of the DNC server and it shows that the only safe place to say anything is at the end of a very long podcast. So that's the only place you can keep anything private.
So we can just divulge all our passwords.
Yeah, exactly,
right now.
Exactly. So thank you for what I think must be getting close to 3 hours, but we enjoyed it. So thank you for sticking around as always. So
this was a monster one, but it was a fun one. So
See you at
we'll
the next
be back. Yeah, we'll be back for more very soon. So thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you all back here on the next episode of the Tournament Poker Edge Podcast.
See ya.
Them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. I love Lucky intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Oh, whoa. Without a gun, and baby, when it's love, if it's not rough, it isn't fun, fun. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. I'll get a heart, show her what I got. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. I'll get a heart, show her what I got.
Love nobody. Can't read my, no, she can't read my poker.